How are you? Good evening, audience. Tonight, we wanted to be able to give you the opportunity to ask questions and to get insights from your candidates. We want you to make an informed decision on who would best represent you in City Hall. My name is Crystal Perryman-Mark. Can everyone hear me well? Yes? I am a community developer, a writer, and activist in our local community. And I was asked by DIA, Democracy in Action, to come and moderate the event. I'd like to set some ground rules before we go ahead. We've determined some questions that we'd like to ask, as well as we are going to give audience time. Hello, welcome. Hello, Mr. Clark, you can join in. We're just getting started. Everyone, this is your sixth candidate, Antonius Clark. I'm going to give everyone an opportunity to introduce themselves. So as I was saying, I would like to go through some ground rules. We've formulated some questions that we'd like to ask the candidates. We're going to give you an opportunity to answer them. We'll allow the audience to pose follow-up, and we may have some follow-up questions as well. I'd ask that everyone speak in their turn. And to keep things fair, I decided to just do a bit of a roundabout order. So I'll prompt you. So, for example, I'll say Anthony, I'll say Arthur, and then you'll go in that order to answer the questions, just to keep it fair. And then I'd like you to remember that if you're heated and you're full of energy and you must respond, to please wait for your turn to speak. I ask that we would also stay within a reasonable time limit, and if you're prompted with a little sleight of the hand, if you can wrap up. And please remember to answer the specific question asked of you. So we're ready to go? Yes? Okay. So I'd like to start by asking each candidate to introduce themselves and to share with us who they are, what brings them to the position of running for councillor. And we will start with... And you have 1 minute, please. Let's start with Antonius Clark.
Wow. Do I touch this? I don't need a mic, right?
Yes, use the mic,
please. Please use the mic. You're being filmed.
Thank you, Mr. Nguyen. Well, it basically is me finding that I've been running in circles all my life, trying to make a difference in the community. And no matter what I've done, I don't feel like I've done enough or that I've been given enough to make a bigger difference. So instead of running in circles and circles and in circles, I decided to break free from the trap and step it up. Because they always say, to do more, you need more. And if I'm looking to influence the community in a positive way, I have to step it up in order to do that. So by running for councillor, I realized that I'll be able to influence the community a lot more, advocate for the change the community needs, and make a lasting impact as I influence those who need to be influenced and as I serve those who need to be served.
Thank you. Can we have John Gallagher?
Hi, thanks, Crystal. It's very simple. I'm running because we need real representation in this city. I believe that we need city councillors who are not professional politicians or party operators. Now, I've never even voted before in my life. I'm one of the least political people that I know. But I do understand principles like service to your community, civic duty. I was a member of the Canadian Forces for 3 years. And so it gives me a sense of responsibility when I look around and I see things happening in the community that I don't agree with or that need to be changed. I'm the person who can get this done. We need more support in this community for the disadvantaged people, for those who need help most. They need to get the most help, and they need counselors who will advocate for them. In a nutshell, we didn't get a time. Am I?
No, you're good.
Oh, okay. I can tell you a little bit about it. What we need is to work to keep our transit fares as low as possible, especially for those, especially for students, especially for single parents and their children, especially for persons of low income. We need more support for those who are newest to this country. And that's about it. Also, we need a full review of policing strategy. So please ask us questions about our stances on these issues. Thanks, guys.
Okay, thank you for that. Naseeb Hussein, please.
Hi, everyone. My name is Naseeb Hussein, and I'm brought to the political arena because I believe that there are many issues in this community that need to be addressed. And it takes someone who lives locally and has lived in the community to understand the needs that need to be dealt with. I've lived in this community for over 20 years, and I've seen it from all visions, all walks of life. Everyone that I know lives in this community. I want to make sure that we're properly represented and we can make sure that the resources in this community are utilized, because as with this forum right here, it's a resource for the community to come out and engage with the political parties and those who can make a difference in the community, but there's just not enough interaction. We have to close that gap, make sure that those who can make a difference are interacting with those who need the difference to be made. And this is what I aim to do, is, you know, make sure that the information is there for those who need it, to connect those that are in need for any service whatsoever that's available through the city to get access to that. I want to make sure that the gap between the policing and the residents of the neighborhood is broken down, and we get more communication between the two, because far too long have we had this divide between the two, and we need to work together, because we're all together. We live in the same space, and we need to share the same space, and you can't have one without the other.
Thank you. Okay. Mr. Peter Liberty.
Thank you. Thank you for organizing this event. It's leadership in action, and we thank you for it. I'm here because I like to make a comeback on one major issue that is affecting this community. And one of the major issues is the closure of the Finch Hospital. You may not know right now what the effect will be on the whole community, but I can tell you that if that hospital closes, you're looking at $2 billion going away from a vulnerable and needy community, away from this area, and it's going to go somewhere else. That will have a spillover effect, because if you think an hospital that brings in over 100,000 emergencies a year, people will have to buy gasoline, and they buy that in our community. People will go and buy to a restaurant, they will be in our local community. People will go to an hotel, and it will be in the local community. So a lot of spillover will be felt if this hospital will close, and it will certainly have some very damaging results for the rest of the community. The other issues are very, very brief. I am not happy about the vehicle license tax. That should be eliminated. Land transfer fees should be eliminated. Those are things that I hear at the when I knock on the doors, and those are the commitments that I make. Finally, and most importantly, I think that we have a problem with the youth unemployment in this area. I'm talking about the ages between 16 and 25. There is a very strong need to bring in a bit of affluence, a bit more stimulation. That should be done with the subway that is coming up here, a project that I have espoused for about 20 years, and a project that I'm very proud of.
Thank you, Peter. Thank you. I will give you more opportunity to expand on your views as well, okay? Peruzza.
Thank you very much. I hope that you don't mind if I stand.
Hey, we're casual. I just wanted to keep that noted.
Exactly.
That we're...
I want to, first of all, thank the organizers of the event. I think it's a great effort to try to pull this debate together and get the community out to it. Thank you very much for that. I'm an immigrant to this country. When my family first came here, we settled not too far from here. I grew up on Weston near Finch. I live currently on Finch in Islington, a little north of Finch off of Islington. I have a stake in this community. I love this area, and I love this city. And I just simply want to see it and see us do better. And that is why I decided to run for re-election some time ago. That is why I'm seeking your support and your endorsement for re-election once again. I think we have a number of great initiatives on the go, things that we need to see through. The subway is coming, and with it, there's revitalization, renewal, lots of investments, lots of jobs, lots of opportunities for all of us. There's better transit that's on its way. York University is at the center of a wonderful community, and York is ready to grow out and bring us all along with it. And I want to be part of that, because I know that we can all make a difference, and we can make a difference for the better. And that's why I'm seeking re-election.
Thank you very much. Okay. Okay. So, like I was saying earlier, is that we want to keep... Oh! I'm so sorry. Arthur, forgive me.
That's quite
me.
All right.
Arthur,
I'm
genuinely,
Arthur Smitherman.
Forgive me. Sorry, go
That's
ahead.
Okay, not to worry. I'm Arthur Smitherman. I moved into the neighborhood in 2006. I was a director at 235 Grand Ravine, which was a co-op that was in trouble, and we had a lot of corruption among the directors. There were a lot of cultural disputes. I managed to use my legal education, my basic post-secondary education, and my dispute resolution training to resolve them. I became interested in the community actually when I was speaking to some police officers that were on bike. They were community oriented, and I reflected on my training in the criminal justice field to understand that in fact they were involved in community policing. And over the last 4 years, I've noticed that there has been a drop in crime. I feel that the resources of Ward 8 have not been utilized appropriately. Rents have almost tripled, I think, in 20 years. And more importantly, since 1981, M3N and M3J have become two of the poorest postal codes in Canada. We have some of the highest unemployment rates. But on the other hand, we have a thriving university community, as well as a large number of businesses. What really prompted me to jump into the political arena, I'd been thinking about it since January, was I met Rob Ford at the Jazz Festival in July, and I told him what I felt about Ward 8, and he told me that I was exactly right, that we were deprived of our resources, not just from the city, but from the province and federal governments as well. And I felt that I had the skills and ability to bring the communities together, protest if necessary, do the petitions and so forth to the provincial government and federal governments, and also work with other councillors and deal with things within the city jurisdiction. But most importantly, I feel that this is an opportunity for me to use my innate abilities and my training and the social sciences to bring everything together for Ward 8.
Thank you. Sorry, before I forgot our candidate, I wanted to mention that we want to keep the evening fairly casual. We want an opportunity for the audience members to come and speak. At this time, I'm going to remind everyone if they can turn down or off their cell phones, just so that we don't have any interruption. We have audio and video happening at the same time, and we'd like to get it posted onto the website, janeandfinch.com. Okay. So for many residents, it is important to have a counselor with a connection to the community, which a few of you have mentioned. Please share with us a place, experience, or event that has taken place in Ward 8 that holds significant memory for you outside of your role, your professional role. And I'm going to start with John this time.
Thanks. Well, I mean, of course, I was born here. In fact, only a few blocks from this building, and I recently returned to go to school. I love this ward. I believe the issues that affect us are not that different from the ones that are affecting the greater Toronto area. So if I can share with you, instead of a story about the place, I'd like to share with you a story about the people. A few of us decided to go down to the recent, I'm not sure what the right word is, the recent ballyhoo at the G20 summit downtown to see what all the fuss was about. And we looked around, and it was like a police state. It wasn't like living in Toronto for a few hours there. And we started talking among ourselves. It started raining, of course, that afternoon, driving us inside. And we started talking and saying, why isn't somebody doing something? I mean, who's in charge of this? Is it the chief of police? Is it the mayor? Is it the province? Is it Stephen Harper? I mean, why doesn't one of us say something to someone and make a difference? And that was really the start of my political aspirations, is witnessing the disenfranchisement of the people in this whole city, but also in this community specifically. And that's why I'm here, because of them, because of what happened on that day. That's the best answer I think I have to that question.
Thank you very much. Naseeb, I'll repeat the question just one more time. For many residents, it's important to have a connection in the community. Please share with us a place, experience, or event that is taking place in Ward 8, which holds significant memory for you, and if you could, outside your professional role. Naseeb.
Actually, one of the events that really had significance on me is that, you know, our neighborhood has a lot of culture, and that one of the main events in this area happens to be the Kitty Carnival, in which it's a smaller version of the Carabana celebration, which all the children take part in a similar parade march. And I attended one of these parades a few years ago, and you know, it really touched me the way that there was so much culture here in our community and the ability to organize in such an efficient manner. And to think, if they can organize events like this, then why is there so much hunger and need within our community? The ability is here. We just need to utilize that ability and get the resources to the right places. And, you know, just going to these events inspires me to move forward and try to get those resources sorted, because I'm a resource coordinator by trade, and I see that there's so much here. We just need to utilize it.
Thank you very much. Peter Liberty.
Thank you. I've had a very long investment, both spiritual as well as financial investment in this community, and I'm very proud of that, mainly because I really believe in the resources of this area. It's very difficult for me to pick up one particular location, but I can go with the very last proposal. There was a time a few years ago when I was approached in bringing Tennis Canada to this ward. Nobody wanted it. York University did not want it. The City of Toronto did not want it. But I thought that bringing the world to Shoreham and Shoreham Court was going to be very important. I fought very, very hard in order to make sure that we brought this world-class facility in a very needy community such as Shoreham. And every time I pass by there, I tell people with pride and say, look, this is something that nobody wanted it, and now it's easy reach for some of the young people to see, some of the young people to work in, some of the people in the media community to participate in. I could have picked many other projects. There are about 120 different projects that I'm very proud of, but this one here is most significant to me.
Thank you. Can I have Anthony, please?
There are so many. I guess I'll talk about some of the professional experiences a little later related to the when the questions are asked. But on a personal level, I'm reminded of my own particular experience. I mentioned earlier I'm an immigrant to this country. I came here when I was 9 years old. I went to a local school, and by the time I was leaving that school, my language skills, you know, were just coming along. And back in those days, we had a program called streaming. They either, you know, you went into general or basic level programs. And if it weren't for athletics and for an opportunity that was handed to me, afforded to me, by a teacher who was going to St. Basil's at the time, where they only had advanced level programming, that I was able to go to that school because all the teachers were trying to talk my then immigrant parents, my father a carpenter, my mother a factory worker, that I should be going to Emory into the general and basic programs. But that opportunity, that single, that hand that it was extended to me, allowed me to go into this other school where they only had advanced programs, and I graduated high school, I graduated university, I've had an opportunity to have a political career, held many significant jobs, done many significant things. And the one thing I have never forgotten is that hand that was extended to me back then. Because I believe, as I believe today, that when we take decisions in government, and we take many decisions each and every day in office and in our lives, that you need to remember that. You need to remember that that you also need to extend a hand to those people who need help when they need that help. It's a lesson I've never forgotten, and it's a lesson I'm always going to carry with me.
Thank you. Arthur Smitherman?
For me, one of the most important things in motivating me to get into the political arena was, in fact, reading the study that the United Way did called Poverty by Postal Code. And when I read the essay that they wrote, I was extremely disturbed. I looked at the demographics of M3N and M3J, and I became quite concerned. And then I looked at the demographics on the city website, and I felt that whatever was going on just wasn't good enough. And I felt that I had the abilities and the determination to turn it around. So I don't mean to be evasive by mentioning it that. It is directly relative because of the postal code aspect to it. But for all intents and purposes, Ward 8 is a story of underutilized assets. It's a story of discrimination by all three levels of government. And it's an example of a failing political system. And that's why I'm here today.
Thank you, Arthur. Antonius Clark?
Well, I don't know if it's to mention the first day I came to Canada, and I used to live at 117 Driftwood Avenue. Coming out of the airport, I never saw snow, but then going home, I saw snow on my front lawn. I was like, wow, this is snow. Or I don't know what to say. My first experience in elementary school or high school when I became the school president, never thinking that I could, and then winning? Or is it to say that going to university is the best memory when I'm leaving high school and here I am in first year university and realizing it's like a shopping center because everyone is dressed up like they're going to a party, and I'm wondering, like, is this learning or is this a fashion contest? Or if it's to say, when my stepfather got murdered at my home, and I'm sitting down at McDonald's at Jen and Finch Mall with Tracy Huffman, I believe she was at the Toronto Sun or the Star at that time, speaking about my work in the community, and then getting a phone call saying that, hey, there's blood leading from your doorsteps, and I think something's wrong, and having to rush home. Or if it's standing up in this very theater, just about there where that mic is, and Peter Lepredi's over here, and they're having a discussion about policing in the community, and me standing there so angry because a week ago my stepfather was killed, and I feel like the world is against me, the world's on my shoulder, and venting and saying, what are you guys doing to help the community? And Peter coming over to me and giving me some assistance and trying to make a difference in the community. I have too many memories here. I don't know which one is the best, but I think those are good enough for me. Is that fair?
Well,
did
sure.
Did I answer your question?
Yes, thank you. Yes, you did. Okay, I'd like to move on. The neighborhood has undergone renaming, and renaming is often connected to trying to reduce, in this instance, it's the renaming. Some of the community feels it's connected to trying to reduce the image of crime. We know the Jane and Finch corridor has a negative connotation, and we can blame many spheres for that. But I wanted to ask, based on your observation, is there more crime in this community than other wards in Toronto? And why do you think What are your ideas around that? And tell us, please, about your perspectives on crime within this ward. And I'm going to start this time with Naseeb Hussain.
Personally, I don't think that this ward has more crime than anywhere else in the city. It's just a matter of image, and we've had this image for quite some time now, since I would say maybe 20 years. It's just been slowly developing, and the media picks up on that, and they just keep running stories about negative things about this neighborhood. But I feel safer here than I do walking downtown, and I want to make sure that the rest of the community feels the same way. And in terms of safety, you know what? The police are here, and they're doing their job, and the community's here, and they want to see more being done. But it's just about getting interaction with what we have here, and through interaction with the community, that's the way we're going to be able to change this. And we need somebody to go out there and promote a positive image for our community. And that's the way we're going to change this. And the stereotype that we're worse than anywhere else in the city, it's totally false, and we need to change it.
Okay, thank you. Peter Lapretti, please.
Yes, crime at the national level has gone down all over the country, and has been down also in the city of Toronto. The unfortunate experience, however, is that in the past year, violent crime, without going into all the details, has been on the rise in this community. And that is a concern to me. This year has not been a good year so far. And my answer to my future is not to have another 5,000 police officers coming in 31 Division, even though I do support police initiatives. My answer, my vision, is to have additional employment opportunities for young people, additional services, no more housing intensification in this area, because we don't need additional people to come here. We need jobs. We need people that that can relate and have spending money instead of going to their neighbors and getting the money out of the neighbors. We need people that are fully employed, and that we bring up the financial level a bit up in this area. And that is what I'm asking for in government.
Thank you, Peter. Anthony Peruzza, please.
There has been a statistical drop in crime, all forms of crime, both across the city, across the country, and most definitely in this community as well. And hopefully that trend will continue in a downward direction. And I think that to some degree, some of the things that we've been working on have had some impact. I think that when you create opportunities for young people, that has an impact. I think when you begin to elevate people out of poverty, that has an impact. I think that when you begin to clean up housing, that has an impact as well. I think that when you begin to deliver programs and deliver programs through our schools, through our community centers, and through our libraries, that has an impact. And we have been doing that. I think that when you target a community as we've been designated the priority neighborhood, and you build centers and activity places for young people, like the Arts Hub that we just built here that's heavily used now by local folks, I think that ultimately has an impact. And hopefully all of those things put together will continue to move crime in a downward direction in this area. And I'm hopeful that as the renewal comes with the subway and with some of the other significant projects that are on their way, that renewal and that wealth that is generated by those projects is shared by the entire community, and hopefully that will have an impact as well.
Thank you. Can I have Arthur Smitherman?
Well, firstly, to understand crime, we have to understand that the culture of policing is, in fact, to invent and manufacture criminals. So a significant portion of the crime that takes place is, in fact, invented. Another thing we have to consider is that scarcity of resources causes conflict, and conflict equates to crime. So the fact that this ward has been deprived of the resources that it deserves for the last 20 years is very much the cause, and the crime, in fact, is the byproduct of the of crime. But as far as crime going down per se, we have to understand that we have an aging population. In fact, in 20 years, 33% of the population will be supporting the other 67%. So that's a very significant thing to know as well. With respect to policing, I spoke to Mr. Robin Ibo, who runs the Afro-Canadian Mediation Center, and he seemed to feel the same thing that I did, that in fact, we need to work with the police more to be less confrontational and be less more subjective rather than objective. And I think when we get the resources that we should be getting, and we start providing more support at the community school level, there will be a significant drop in crime. Certainly unemployment is a big problem, and I see the best way to deal with unemployment is to be our own solution and to help the young people to develop their own business plans and very much learn to be their own entrepreneurs. And I'm proposing, if elected, that we have our own Chamber of Commerce and have a junior Chamber of Commerce where, in fact, we can develop our own entrepreneurs. And I think that'll be a significant help as well.
Thank you. Antonius, please. Clark.
Well, a lot of people in the community would like to see more police. And I've heard the cry for more police in the community. And I believe that's why Peruzza had decided to answer that cry and get more police with Tavis and what have you to keep our streets more safer. But my older brother would always say to me, if you get more people looking for one thing, you're going to obviously have a greater turnout of it. If you take more police to anywhere in Canada, anywhere in Toronto, they're going to find more crime. Is there more crime here? No, there's not. But if there's more police there, they're going to find more issues. And like Arthur said, some of it is invented as well, right? I mean, jaywalking is considered a crime, right? In the real essence of it all, I believe that we need more effective policing because we do have a little bullying going on. We do not need more police in Jennifer Finch. We need effective police. We need some of the people who live here to be hired on the police force to come back and do community policing. Because if you have people that are coming from another neighborhood to police us in this neighborhood, of course they're going to have an insensitive approach to the community. So we need them to be more sensitive, more mindful to the culture, and we need more communication between the different cultures of this community. Because you have an Italian community who is not trying to understand the poor black community, then you have an Asian community who is not trying to understand the Italian community, and before you know it, everyone is pointing the fingers at each other, saying, hey, that's the criminal, that's the criminal. And instead of working together to make a more better community spirit, as one community, there's fights. I think crime has gone down, yes, but I do think that violent crime has gone up, like Peter said. Ultimately, we need to find a strategy of engaging the young people, because when you see crime in this community, it is young people. We need to engage these young people, because when they sit around not doing anything, even loitering becomes a crime. And a lot of times, they get arrested for loitering. My older brother also always said to me, you know, the police don't prevent crime. They respond to crime. You go to an event where the police are walking around and a shot rings out, someone dies. The police were there. But all they could do at that point is respond to crime. So having more police in the community is not going to decrease crime. They're just going to respond a lot more often. So we need to find a way to get to the roots of the problem, to rid the community of the crime so that we can have a safer community. Personally, the community is extremely safe.
Thank you. Please, may I also have John Gallagher to close that question.
Hi, everyone. I can't help it. Anthony's towering over me. I need to stand at least once.
Feel free.
You know, as some of my fellow candidates alluded to, so much of this is just a problem of stigma. It's prejudice, plain and simple, a lot of it. You get that feeling in the remarks of certain mayoral candidates who I cannot afford to name. talking about how the problem is so many immigrants into this city, that's what the problem is. Toronto, our motto is diversity, our strength. And where do you think they're talking about? It's here. This is the real Toronto, as far as I'm concerned. We don't have a problem. We have a perception of a problem. I can't speak for everybody, but I feel safe walking around our community at night. I feel as safe as anywhere I've lived. You know, I hate to keep telling stories about the G20 summit, but it goes to my next point, is that we don't need more police. We need smarter policing. We need, as Mr. Clark said, more effective policing. I just want to tell the story about, has anybody heard the story of Officer Bubbles? I get a couple murmurs. All right.
I'm going to give you one moment for that.
1 minute. Okay, yes. I can do this in 1 minute.
Great.
An officer at the G20 summit arrested a protester for blowing bubbles at him.
Oh, dear.
Yeah, true story.
I remember.
See, you know. Ahead. And this was, of course, uploaded to YouTube. And everybody said, what is going on? What is this man doing? He's a bully. He's a fool. And the way he's chosen to prove that he's not a bully or a fool is by suing YouTube. That was news today. This is exactly what I mean. It's symptomatic of a larger problem with just the failure of police to think, the failure of them to really be in touch with the real world and what the community needs. This is exactly what we need less of in our community. And once we get that, we can turn it around, we can have pride in our community. Like I said, the recent immigrant community combined with York University, we're the real Toronto. We have so much potential here. We need to recognize that. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay, so I want to ask a follow-up question, and after to this, I'm going to open up to the audience to speak again on the issue of perception of crime in the area. What role have you yourself played in the last past years in terms, this is also a community development question as well, to make sure that Jane and Finch is not known as a safe haven for criminals, but instead a community with hardworking people, assets that are positive? And what do you plan to do to meaningfully address the crime that does exist for those who feel it's unsafe and who have moved out? What do you think as counselor would be your role to work on the crime that we do have, that we have acknowledged that is there? And I want to start with Peter Lopretti.
Wow, do we have half an hour to answer all those questions?
I'll give you 3 minutes for this question.
It's a very important summary because you touch upon four or five different arguments, and I'd like to discuss them all. But as an individual, I've taken enough steps to make sure that I truly believe, and I continue to believe, even after my 2006 election, in this community. I took one of the vulnerable buildings in the Jane Shoreham area, a vulnerable building that was being abandoned, not something that to be proud of, and I created one of the medical clinics to be proud of in this community. Retrofitted it inside, retrofitted it outside to make it look a very attractive building, a very good building. And I truly poured in my heart, my emotions, and my money in order to make sure that this this building was going to be an example to everybody in the area. In terms of crime, yes, crime, it's not an easy solution. It's at least a five-pronged approach. You cannot just say that the police involvement and relations will improve in the area. It's only one of the many, many things. I make sure that there are, in my past 4 years, I've helped at least 5 churches, 2 temples, and the mosque to try to teach some of the young people the values, try to cater to the young people and make them better citizens. In terms of, as an employer in this area, I'm very pleased to tell you that I've had at least 5 young people that were between 17 and 21 that are still working at the Joan Shoreham Clinic, motivating them to end their medical school or going to the medical field right from the vulnerable communities such as Shoreham Court, Driftwood Court, and others. So those are the practical, concrete examples of what I'm giving you in my approach in terms of helping this community and making sure this community continues to thrive. Will we be able to solve the problem as a city councillor? Not alone. We need the province, we need the feds, we need the social services, we need the parents, we need the policing, we need the institutions, we need the churches. All of those will be at hand in order to solve the problems in this community. Without the cooperation of all, we won't be able to succeed.
Thank you. May I have Anthony Peruzza?
Just a couple of things related to this. Some of the things I've tried to do, for example, safety audits. A really simple thing to do. You take some leadership, you bring in all of the experts in the various fields, from transportation to police to emergency service personnel and so on. You bring them into the neighborhood, you do a walkabout, and you take down notes and try to make unsafe areas safer. So you get the experts in their various fields, you clear some shrubs, you bring in some lighting, you do changes to areas, you make them safer. That's one thing we've done and we've tried to do, and one thing and something we will continue to do. And you do it on a neighborhood-by-neighborhood basis. Some of the other things that we've tried to do is encourage people to reclaim their public spaces. So I've tried to bring in landscaping around housing, for example, where once barren places existed, now you have benches, you have activity places, so that people can come out and reclaim those spaces, so that as people come out into the community, you make it safer. I am delighted now when I go into some of the areas in our community where I see mothers with strollers and kids in parks till the wee hours of the night, because that makes the community safer for all of us. And I just want to speak to another matter that was just raised a little earlier about the kinds of communities that that live here. There's over 100 different languages spoken in this area. And I can't tell you how elated I get when I'm in on a street or on someone's porch. And I just tell you about a little experience that I had recently. I was on Top Cliff on a porch, and several of the neighbors came out and because they saw me there, and I was speaking to an Italian fellow. And then we were joined by a Guyanese individual, a Vietnamese individual. And we were sitting there chatting, and they were all very friendly with each other. And the Guyanese fellow puts his arm around the Italian guy and called him Zio Vittorio. That's how we make communities safer. It's not by creating divides between ourselves, but creating a sense of community, building the bridges and understanding. It's wonderful that Vittorio shares his tomatoes with members of his community, and they come over and they call him Zio, because that's the brilliance and the greatness of our neighborhoods, where over 100 different languages are spoken and where everyone basically lives in harmony with each other. And that's what we need to encourage, because the more we encourage that, the safer and safer we will make our community for all of us.
Thank you. So can I have Arthur Smitherman, sorry. Okay, so just before you go ahead, I just want to remind everybody we're reaching at 7. We'd like to close our debate about 8:15 this evening. So continue with our questions. As we go along, you still have your 2.5 minutes for this question. As we go along, we'll try to keep the responses to a minute, please. Great. Thank you, Arthur.
For anybody who's checked my website and looked at the social and economic prospectus I wrote with John Gordon and an economist from York University, you'll see that I'm a proponent of community policing to deal with the ills of Ward 8. But it goes to much more than that. I would really like to foster a community mentality and a community togetherness by bringing more to the community school level. I would like to see adult education at community school level. I'd like to see English as a second language. I'd like to see meal plans and daycare right at the school level. And what happens as a consequence of that is that the community starts to nurture the people that are at the community, and you foster a sense of community within that direct community. And the deterrence for bad behavior or undesirable behavior is grossly underestimated when these kinds of things occur. But certainly the police do have an important part to play. And as I said previously, they need to learn to be less adversarial. And they need to understand that they're dealing with special youths that have grown up in conflict. They've grown up with scarce resources. And they are quite a different culture than a lot of the rest of the youth in Toronto. So they do need special treatment, but it really does start with the community, and everybody has to help. As Peter said, the churches need to be involved. All of the community groups need to be involved, and everybody needs to be part of the solution, because if you're not part of the solution, you are, in fact, part of the problem.
Thank you. Can I have Antonia's clerk, please?
Well, I'm going to have to be honest with you, Crystal. That was a really big question.
I see.
And the justice of that question, I'd like you to break it down into two for me. I believe the first half was about what I have tried to do in the community to deter the bad image and the crime. And the second half was, what do I plan to do as a counselor to try to make a difference in the community?
Correct.
Well, I started up an organization called Friends in Trouble Youth Initiative and raised over $500,000 to engage the most at-risk youth in the community. Because if we're talking about crime, if we're talking about the problems in the community, it doesn't make sense going to the peripheral. Go to the core and deal with the problem. So they come out of jail, I work with them to get them back onto the positive lifestyle in the community. But I found that was very hard. And when I looked into the greater community, I found that there was a lot of money being given to organizations in Jane and Finch, and they were not helping the at-risk youth. So the most troubled youth, who people would say, that's the criminal or that's the bad guy, they're not going to the programs, but yet they're given funds to help these youth. And that's why the crime continues to happen in the community, because a bunch of organizations are spending big money, I mean millions of dollars, to try to make a difference, but they're not spending the money in the right places. Instead, what you have are executive directors and coordinators and all these other staffs who are getting paychecks to go home, but the community is still impoverished, right? So I tried my hardest, but like I said, I've been running in circles for a long time, and that's why I've talked about circles, because it's beyond community engagement with programming. When you have young adults who come out of jail and they don't want to sit down in a circle and get a bus ticket and a pizza, they want a job. But all the community agencies want to give them a bus ticket and a pizza and tell me about your lived experiences, right? They need skills, they need employment, they need help to go feed their children and get themselves back reintegrated as contributing citizens. That's what I've done. As a counselor, I could say what I'll do is continue to do to advocate for the real truth in this community. From all my experiences, I know exactly who's who and what's what. I know who has this budget, I know who has that budget, I know who's doing that, I know Vito on Topcliff, who's sharing his tomato with the Guyanese guy next door to him, and the Vietnamese guy who's saying hello to him. But at the end of the day, those same people on the back road are saying, you know what, I don't want this area to be like Jane and Finch over there. They all point the finger. Because back in the back roads where people get along, they do get along. That's very true. But everyone has a common enemy, and that's Jane and Finch, right? So now the question is, how do we reallocate all that fund that has come to Jane and Finch and being wasted and get it to be spent in the right places? Because I'm sure if you did an audit of everyone who lives in Jane and Finch, and that was to say, okay, there's $18 million that has been given to Jane and Finch organizations to help at-risk youth. If there was the opportunity to re-spend it in a place that would have a greater impact, yay or nay, they would say yay. Because currently we do have the resources. It's not a matter of getting more resources. It's a matter of spending the buck where it can make the biggest difference. Engaging the most marginalized youth, the guys who are causing the trouble, so that trouble could be reduced to a nil. You're never going to get rid of crime. Not even the great Pope was able to. But what you could do is make it reduced to a point where you could say, you know what, that's the bad guy, because there's only one bad guy, instead of 100 of them running around. I hope that answers your question.
Okay, thank you. Can I have John Gallagher speak to the question?
Well, of course, I can't claim as much activity as Mr. Peruzza or Mr. Lupretti. They've each had quite a bit of time to work at these problems. But I think in the end, what it comes down to is personal integrity. It comes down to being the change you want to see in the world. As I said before, I love this community, and I think that that's a big part of what's going to make it better is more respect by everybody in it for what a great place we have here. I think one of the things that I've proven is my willingness to listen to members of this community, members of this ward, about what their problems are, about what they feel needs to change. And I think that's the most important job a counselor can possibly have. It's one of the reasons what I want to do when I'm elected is open an office with an open door policy so that members of the community can voice their concerns directly to me, so that they know for a fact that somebody on council is aware of what's going on. That, I think, is the biggest X factor in solving so many of the problems that our community is dealing with. It's a long question. I think that's the most perfect answer I could give.
Thank you very much. Naseeb Hussein.
Okay, well, let me break this down into two parts. What I've done is I advocate for my community. If someone asks me where I'm from, I say Jane and Finch. They ask me, oh, well, that's a really, really dangerous neighborhood. And you tell them, no, it isn't. You know, I've lived there for so long. I understand where these images are coming from, but this is not the case. That is what I've done for all of my life, not just in the few years that have been, you know, just passed. But what I will do, advocate, interact, and engage. It's a three-part system right there. That's the way we're going to change the view of our community and make it safer for everyone. First, you advocate to the community of what you think needs to be done. Then you interact with them. You have to go out. You have to engage every person and find out where do they see the needs for change. Where do they have concern? Is it gun crime? Is it this part of the neighborhood? Is it this time during the day? And then you have to engage the resources that are there for them, engage the community groups, the social justice groups, and the policing associations, anything that can help them. So you take those ideas that you get from talking to the people, then you engage those resources that can make the difference, and then you address the long-term goals that can solve these issues without going through those preventative measures. You address your education. Through education, we can reduce crime because everyone knows that if a person is more educated, they're less likely to commit a crime and they're more likely to get a job. And those who are employed don't need to turn to crime. So you're reducing the crime in that way as well. And, you know, just a full circle approach. Just make sure that you engage the community and make sure that they know that there's somebody out there that's doing something for them that they can count on. And that's how you do it.
Thank you. I'd like to open the floor up if anyone would like to ask any more questions on the topic of perception and crime in the neighborhood. The microphone is right here. Hello, sir. Can you state your name and if you'd like? And your
good question. Afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. I came in late. I didn't hear from the beginning, but my name is Mr. Leslie Brown in Jane and Finch. I'm going to tell on a plane. There are two counselors up there that know me. And I've been going through a lot in Jane and Finch with Mr. Lapretti, Mr. Parosa. And they are counselor in this area. But it's not them, it's me. Me are the one that elect anyone that run in Jane and Finch. And I still not get whatsoever I supposed to get. I walk inside here. And when I come, I hear everybody talking about the police. I'm in politics from when I was 14. And I come in Canada and I live in Jane and Finch from 1982. Every politician in here know me. Trusty. I see three new faces up there, or four, which do not know nothing about Jane and Finch, or they know. Me is the one know. And when I tell you from the depths, I wasn't coming here. But the people in the neighborhood, say, Mr. Brown, come and hear what it is. Because those two counselors, Mr. Lapretti, Mr. Parusa, know what I do. If I say them not to win, them not going to win. There are different cases. Not the police is the problem. It's the work, lack of work in this community. I work with the city, and I work in water, and I leave water and work in the community center. Through what? The youths. And if I could name how many dead before my face, it's not the police, it's the solution. It's who got there to look after the people. And there are lots of suggestions that I have that I would ask.
Sir.
Both councilors, I know, but I beg a little time because.
I just want you to put it in a question.
Yes. Thank I am the one that bearing the headache in this community. And the question that I'm going to ask, housing is rich. Housing is rich. Most of these people call me and show me the condition and show me how much they're paying for rent. For all these years, I've been fighting for a youth place in Jane and Finch. And anytime we got a youth center that is youth, most of the crime will cut down. Counselor, just last week I was listening on the TV where you cannot have 4 or 5 cars. Those are waste. Housing are waste. Why we can't have a community center? This is for the youth. We are the job. I get place here for them. Get young girls to go and learn sewing. It turned down. They take it away. Now I ask the question. All these counselors that are who going for council, have them ever sit down and have an idea? How can we bring back? There is no country that run without the economic. Number one, how many of them ever walk into a business place or sit down in City Hall or where and say, you know, how are we going to try to help this? Is go to all the employer. Find out how much they're paying the workers and say, you know what? We're going to subsidize to you people that you employ more people. It can be done.
Okay, so your question is...
And my question, what is the new result? I walk through housing. I'm telling you, I'm upset.
I understand your
I walk through housing up to yesterday when I go through the whole place. And people are asking me questions. I see even some of the housing where camera used to be, they're gone. I fight with La Pretty to get some of those camera build up for the safety of the people. The police is not the solution.
Correct.
Getting more police is no sense. It's more waste when you can spend it on the youth. On the youth, not the police. Because the police don't care. I go on 31 division and I have meeting. Right now, I just finished a program from 11. Anybody in this area can tell you.
Sir, I'm going to have to.
For the 11.
Sir, I'm going to have to interrupt you. I just need you to ask the candidates a direct question.
Yes, yes. What I would like to ask. I wasn't here to know. And well, I will start on Mr. Lapperty. Excuse me of skipping. I intend, and I know you're coming back. Mr. Parousa, I give him 4 years. 4 years. And there's a lot of things I see I heard.
Sir,
I heard, so I
question?
Want to ask, what is the new solution that's going to be in Jane and Finch? I think enough place for the youth. Jobs, trade center, and everything. Name the youths that anytime they commit themselves and they don't go there and commit themselves, there's a punishment. But you cannot punish them without they have nothing. Go into the plaza, go all about, they hang out, and they're asking me every day, Mr. Brown, is you the counselor? Any problem is we. 2, 3 o'clock in 31
okay.
Division.
Mr. Brown, thank you. I appreciate your comments.
So I want to know tonight, what is the commitment for the youth in Jane and Finch? I won't come back here next time because I don't. When I don't see what I get for the youth.
Okay, so the question is, how are you going to address the needs of youth in the Jane and Finch community? Please, let's go panel straight and across. Thank you.
There's a number of things that we've both done, and I think we're going to continue to do. One of the things that we've done is we take youth from Toronto Community Housing, give them training through HSI down at the Downsview base.
Can you elaborate on the acronym HSI?
It's a subsidiary of Toronto Community Housing. It's the construction arm of Toronto Community Housing. So we give youth training through that group, and then we put them back into the housing to work. One of the other things that we've done very, very significant, and it's about opportunities. It's about creating opportunities. It's about creating job opportunities, about creating educational opportunities. It's about creating opportunities at every level. One of the other things that we've done, we now have a youth employment office at the City of Toronto, where we, when we contract out a city project, for example, we just built a library in Scarborough through the library board, and unskilled youth were placed into jobs to assist in the work of that project. And it is our hope that when we do those things, that those youth eventually get connected to the unions that provide the formal training and that move on into accredited jobs. The other thing that we are doing, and we've opened it up to, is the other major projects, like the TTC initiatives, where with the contractors, with the unions, and so on. And I see Leslie coming to the microphone. I think he wants to ask another question.
Leslie, I'm sorry, Mr. Brown. You're going to have to wait just a moment.
No, and that's fine.
Okay, No. We come here to argue tonight.
Okay.
So we ask for time that anybody want to give the idea that we get it. No short limit.
Right, but what I would like to do is to address the first question.
Yes, that's why I come back to answer the phone, to answer Mr. Antoni.
Okay.
So just make it continue, please.
Thank you.
And then I get
the report. Okay, so one of the other things that we are doing is we're opening up employment opportunities as part of the city's capital works projects across the system, both the projects that the City of Toronto delivers as well as the projects that are delivered through the agencies, boards, and commissions of the city, like the TTC, like the library board, like the police, and so on. So that is an initiative that is coming along and should create significant opportunities for young people, especially locally, to participate in these projects as they get developed.
Thank you.
Yes, Mr. Perosa. I hear you talk about library in Scarborough. None of these people live in Scarborough. They all live down here, and Adrian and Finch carry the baddest reputation. I live here from 1982, and we don't pick the beams out of Scarborough Eye and leave our neighborhood, and I don't feel good. When I hear that Scarborough get this, I said, is the youth. I have to walk 24-7 in this area. And all them cry, Mr. Brown, what is for us? What is for us? What can we get? We can cut down the crime if we give them something to do. Training, job, we can do it in Jane and Finch and keep it. See the hospital out there, I fight for it. And now they're closing it and move it. What happened to Jane and Finch?
Mr. Brown, I want to give all the candidates an opportunity.
I'm going to give them an opportunity
Mr.
to answer.
Mr. Brown, I want to give the candidates an opportunity to answer. So I'm going to ask you, please, to let them answer, and then we can move on to the next question, okay?
Thank you.
I appreciate that. Thank you. Can I have John, please?
Mr. Brown, I salute you, sir. That's the voice of righteous indignation. That's the kind of passion that deserves respect. Please. And I think you're absolutely right. We need to engage youth. At the Driftwood Community Center, where we were all gathered to listen to members of the community, the big issues that they felt needed our attention were youth-centered. They were saying we need programs for youth that they will engage with, not just youth programs, but something that will actually interest youth.
So what do you propose, John? That's the question. I just want to stick.
I see. Okay. I won't speechify. Okay. More than anything, dialogue. That's what we need is dialogue. The truth is, I don't know what the answer is about how to engage. I'm not going to pretend I have the right answer. What we need is dialogue. We need discussions exactly like this one if we're going to solve that problem. We need an end to racial profiling of youth. We need an end, as you were saying, police are not the answer. We need to make sure that that's noted by the police. That's the best I can offer as far as, at this point, we need more dialogue between council and the public. And I think your speech is the biggest indication that old solutions haven't worked, and we need new blood in council, somebody who's willing to work towards solving these problems.
Thank you. Nasib?
Okay, in terms of youth, there's two things I really want to get at here. You know, Mr. Brown here inspired me of one of the things that I really want to get at. I had a teacher named Mr. Brown and in Brookview Middle School, and he was my shop teacher, and he taught me a trade, you know, how to work with wood. And I believe that we definitely need something like that in this area. We want to bring up a trade school into our area. And
is that your platform specifically? Mm-hmm. Will your Yes,
I want to bring a trade school into our area to give the youth the opportunity to get out there and learn how to do something with their hands, engage them. And another thing you talked about was the community housing. If we had a trade school in this area, we could have specific projects based in the community housing in which they can work to better that community as well. And another thing I want to address is the time that these youth have. I was talking to somebody in the Driftwood Community Center a few months back when I was trying to learn about the issues. And they told me that the youth need more spaces. So one of the other things I want to push forward is actually to create youth-run spaces within all the community centers in which they can feel safe to come and interact with other youth and engage with each other. And in that way, they can work within a system rather than outside of the system and feel alienated and turn to crime or anything else that might not be as positive as working together within the space. And those are the two things I'd bring to the table.
Thank you, Nasib. Antonius Clark?
Well, I guess no one owns a good idea, because I feel like Nasib gypped me and he stole my idea of going, building the trade school, and I hope that he takes offense to it. But really and truly, no clapping. Come on, guys. When Mr. Lopretti was in power, he was a great man in the community. He reminds me of Mr. Brown. His name was Ed Williams. Remember Ed? You see, he laughs. And Mr. Williams, you see Mr. Brown, you know Mr. Williams. All right. Mr. Williams said, let's work with Peter and let's build a trade school. And Peter advised that, you know what, Regina Patches has been empty for a number of years. We're going to go to Regina Patches, and we're going to get the unions, and we're going to make this a full-out trade school. I'm talking about from masonry to carpentry to drywalling to electrician work to plumbing, you name it. And the other space, it'll be youth space, right? We are working relentlessly at it. Unfortunately, the campaign ended, and it was not the best results we were looking for. And then Peruzza got in power, and everything came to a halt. Nothing got done. All ideas were thrown through the window. To the point where I remember, and I'm sure Mr. Peruzza should get mad at this one, I had a group of youth with me, and we were going around, and every week what I would do is take the kids to see Mr. Peruzza. Because when Lopretti was in power, I was able to take the youth to Lopretti, and Lopretti would say hello, he would smile, he would give them a good shake of a hand, make it be a good experience for them. When I went to Peruzza's office, he looked at me and said, what do you want? I can't do nothing for you, right? He sat down with me once or twice, but then he got fed up, and he basically kicked us out, right? I was hurt. And I remember I was holding my Bible in my hand. And he looked at me and said, what is that book? I said, the good book, the Bible. And he goes, I didn't expect you to walk around with that book, right? I'm sure he remembers. He smiles a little bit. I still love him, though. In any event, I want to see a trade school built in this community, because not just about youth, Mr. Brown. The problem with youth is they get old, right? And when they're no longer between that catchment age, they're no longer... You know, you can't engage them no more. So what about young adults who have been in a life of crime, who are now older, who need to be engaged because they need to get jobs and they don't want programming or they don't want a youth center? We need a center that's going to train not only youth, but also young adults who have not been able to get formal education. We also need to fight the university more, because a lot of people like to say the university is doing good work. BS. We need the university to take in more mature students. Because a lot of people have made mistakes when they were younger, and they've realized it in their later age, and they want a second chance. And if the university is saying, we're only going to take 30 students a year, and you're looking at Jenna Finch, where there's over 50,000 people, they need to increase that number to maybe 300 a year, right? More mature students means more education. A trade school means better opportunity to get into life.
Thank you, Mr. Clark.
Hi, Mommy. Thanks for coming. Mwah.
Very good. Mr. Lapretti,
if you,
please.
If you could pardon me and allow me to make a 30-second announcement. Unfortunately, I had a 7:30 meeting with a group of people at the Allen Road and Shepherd Avenue where a woman, an elderly woman, was struck, and the residents wanted to meet with me to see my vision for safety in that community tonight. If anybody here is from my office, could you please advise that I will be delayed until after 8 o'clock, and I will only be able to stay until 8 o'clock.
I understand. Thank you.
Mr. Leslie Brown, you are the success story of Jenny Finch, and I truly mean it.
Thank you.
You're the success story of Jenny Finch because you truly care about the community. I have never seen a gentleman stand up to a bunch of young people without being afraid and telling them how to behave. I mean, I was afraid that standing beside him the other day on Yorkwood's plaza, and he was there, you know, yelling at some young kids because they were misbehaving in the plaza without being afraid of saying, I am working at the community center, and I dare you to come in the community center and misbehave over there. You are a success story indeed. They should call you Mr. Jenny Finch.
Mr. Lapretti, your platform.
I've had the pleasure of helping sharing Mr. Brown's success story by doing something for him when he started to work with the City of Toronto. But I wanted to say there are two small events that I used to do in this community. Very, very successful events. A youth fair every single year. I would get the police department, the hospital, York University, some of the big businesses in this community, meet at the Driftwood Community Center and have all these people and invite all the youth in this community to come there and be exposed to some of the positions that may be available in the area. As a result of those youth fair, I can tell you that the very first black female planner for the city of North York, and I mean it, the first black city planner, a very important role, not somebody... not someone that has a menial job, but a planner, came from Jenny Finch, and it was a woman. The first black male planner for the city of North York came from Killeen Finch. It was because of these activities that we did in this community, and I'm very proud to say that the youth fairs were essential to this community in order to try to get them jobs in here. What shames me the most is to say that we have two schools in this area. Two schools. One that I think is sponsored by one of the candidates in this on this panel that charges $7,000 per student to go and get some training. And then there is mine, a Finch and Chesswood, where we churn out 30 young people every single trimester and we teach them to do very small jobs, painting, tile setting, drywalling, whatever, and we find them jobs for $2,000. This is a sacrilege in this community. It should be totally, totally free. We have asked the Government
Lapretti?
Of Ontario for sponsorship. We've
Mr.
asked the
Lapretti?
City of Toronto to give us money, not one penny, and we're surviving only on very, very small donations from the community in order to get these young people alive.
Thank you, Mr. Lapretti. Mr. Smitherman, and once you're finished, I'd just like to know we have four questions coming up, okay? And I'm going to limit the responses to 30 seconds, okay? Go ahead, Mr. Smitherman. Thank you.
Firstly, I think we should recognize Mr. Brown as a pillar of the community. I appreciate the way he refused to be censored and demanded his rebuttal to his argument. If we had another 47,000 like Mr. Brown, we probably wouldn't have any problems here. I think that it's very important that we work with unions. I have firsthand experience with the Operators Union and the Laborers Union, and they, in fact, do have programs. With respect to government helping out, we really need to pressure them to get the funding for these kinds of programs that we're demanding. And it's very important that everyone in the community stand together shoulder to shoulder to get them. And that means signing petitions and having protests. If you don't protest, it's just a piece of paper, a petition. I've already been involved with changing the Condo Law Act. I've worked with some Condo Law activists. And you will find MPPs and MPs that will cooperate with you, and they'll tell you the same thing. You can sign, get 10,000 names on a petition, but if you're not having a protest, it's really just a piece of paper. There's other persuasive manners of getting MPPs to...
Sorry, I just would like you to elaborate on your views for youth as per the question. What would your...
Well, that's what we have to do with youth. Okay. That's how you get the youth the programs.
Okay.
Programs to fund the kinds of things that Antonio's professed, and that's what needs to be done. But also it's very important to have these kinds of meetings where options are generated and people come forth with their ideas, and everybody has a voice, and we all work together to find the solution, and that's how communities are built.
Thank you. I'd like to call to the microphone Mr. Walter.
I do believe that everybody knows here how badly we need our hospital in the community. We feel our hospital is sick. Public communication, transparent communication, does not exist. We feel that the transparent public consultation is a pill hard to swallow. We want to know what will happen to the hospital when the new hospital is going to be built. I've learned that Anthony Peruso has been accepting money from Ruben Devlin to run his campaign. He also tells us that he's on our side to keep our hospital here. Now, I would really like to know whose side is he really on? If he's on Ruben Devlin, who wants to move the hospital, or is he on our side who's going to keep it here?
Okay. Mr. Peruso, can you answer the question, please?
You know, when they first announced in 1999, 1999, that the hospital was going... The hospital, many of you may not know this, Humber River Regional Hospital, when the Mike Harris government employed the Health Care Restructuring Commission, and they closed Northwestern General down on Keele Street and amalgamated the Church and Finch Hospitals into the Humber River Regional Hospital, the hospital submitted a plan to the then city to build an 8-story addition to the front of that hospital. I was working at the city at that time. I wasn't a counselor. I was working there. And that plan was so important to get through council and to get through site plan. But it was bogged down in all this detail about queuing and parking and trees, and then the entire community was organized because on the fourth floor of this hospital, they wanted to build an outdoor area where some mental health patients could go out and smoke. And the community was organized to fight that. And they stalled those plans. And then the hospital abandoned those plans at the city. The minute that that occurred, the first person out there, firing out there, to do a petition on the hospital was Anthony Peruzza. In 1999, 2000, still have the petition with hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of signatures on it. Because I thought, if this doesn't happen now, the hospital will look to do something different. I was the first person out there. Because I've always believed that this hospital is at the center of the community and needs to stay here. Absolutely needs to stay here. And this has been a debate that's been going on for the last 12 years, and Anthony Peruzza would absolutely fight to his last breath if we were told tomorrow that the York Finch Hospital is either closing or moving in its entirety. Absolutely. I agree the hospital should stay here, and we all as a community need to fight for that.
Thank you. Can I have to the mic? Excuse me. Can I have to the mic, Madam Butterfly?
Butterfly.
Sorry. The question was actually directed at Mr. Peruzza, but if you would like, please address.
I'd like to answer the question. I can say inadvertently, I think that someone brought me into the fight. This is January 1995, long before he addresses the 1999 period, where it says Metro Toronto Hospital restructuring to happen over the next 2 years. The hospital was threatened twice before.
Okay.
In 1995 and 2002. It says here, Peter Lepretti, North York Council for Ward 3, said York Finch Emergency Department was built to handle 20,000 cases a year. In 1994, it handled 90,000 emergency cases without an additional facility. Don't touch York Finch Hospital or you'll be in trouble. That was the first time that as a councillor, a little North York councillor, we saved the North York Hospital with Wayne Burnett, who many of you know, and the project Rebirth in this area. We saved it again. We saved it again in 2001 when the plans were already made not to build an extension here, but to build a major hospital at Shepherd and Keele. So absolutely, there were plans to build a major hospital at Keele and Shepherd. And once again, we were able to fight it off and convince the province not to do it. Whatever happened between 2006 and 2010, I've never heard anybody other than Mr. Antonius Clark and maybe one other candidate here that has made an issue of the hospital an issue in this election to bring it to the surface. If we believe, why did he not put it in writing? Why did he not give a response to the committee that has been working so hard? Mr. Walters has been collecting over 10,000 signatures in this. Where was the help of a counselor in this area?
Thank you.
I think the rest of us should respond if
absolutely. Okay. That's only fair. Thank you.
Thank you. Again, I don't have sins of my past to answer for about who didn't save what or trying to get credit for anything, but I can tell you that it would be a very hard argument to make that one thing our community needs less of is hospitals. Or schools for that matter. I mean, we need these are the things we can't do without. It's as simple as that.
Just a moment. Go ahead. We'll go across.
You know, I'll have to agree. Everyone's going to say that, well, there's no room to lose a hospital or a school. You know, I've worked with Walter in the past, and I understand the need of having a hospital here, the social economic needs. You know, our community can't deal without that. But what's happened here is that the community has been taken out of the picture and has not been consulted enough. If there was any consulting at all, Walter would be able to speak more on that. But what we need to do now is actually open the channels of communication between those who make the decisions and those who want to get input on those decisions. That is not there right now. All communication has been blocked out. The Humber River Health Coalition has been trying to open these consultations with the community so that we can have some input on what's happening with the site. It's been told to us that the site is already been slated to change facilities to the new site. And what we need to do is actually open those communication lines again with those who can make a difference and try to make some sort of an impact on what facilities and what services that we can use the site that's already here to make sure that the social economic difficulties that would incur if we lose those services shall not.
Thank you. Antonius.
In going door to door, I have found that there is a great split in the community. Half of the community wants the hospital to go because they feel that the service that they're getting there is atrocious and that having a new facility will give them better service. And it's sad, but it's a reality. Elderly people are saying, my husband was dying. I took him there. She said, I might as well have killed him myself because the service was that bad. My mom used to work at the hospital. To take it further, another half says, no, we need the hospital, right? The reality is even the walk-in clinics in the community are poorly serviced. You go to a walk-in clinic, you go there for 3 hours, you get only one problem at a time. I went to the doctor, I had three problems, one with my head, one with my hand, one with my foot. I said, Doc, I'm here for my three problems. He said, choose one, right? I've been waiting in your waiting room for 2.5 hours, and now I can only choose one of my problems, right? And I found out from my special partner that they get paid based on how much visits they get. So it's in their best interest for you to come back another time and another time. But I don't have 6 hours to wait in a waiting room. So I just, you know, healed naturally. What I would like to see for that site, because we are going to lose your hospital, is that ambulatory care is not enough. Ambulatory care is going to be a poor walk-in clinic again with poor services, everyone frustrated and dissatisfied, and all the attention and money is going to go to the brand-new facility at Keenan Wilson. I would like to see that there is a geriatric center of excellence, and this is not my idea. This comes from Rennie, Walter, and the other people in the Humber Health Coalition, that there is a great aging population. You go door-to-door, you see a lot of elderly people who are becoming seniors. Their children move out to Woodbridge or wherever else it may be and leave them at home, right? There's going to need to be an increase in capacity for old folks' homes where the elders could be taken care of as they exit out of life. And I think that's very important because there's a great aging population.
Thank you. Mr. Smitherman.
Well, I think it's quite clear that with the aging population, I mentioned the demographics previously, that the hospital is needed. It's needed for economic reasons as well. And if Walter's going to get 10,000 names on a petition, I'm sure we can get 2,000 or 3,000 people at least to protest. And if, in fact, that happens and I'm elected as council, it's out of the question that that hospital's going to close.
Thank you. I'd like to call to the mic Benny. Sorry. Benny, and then you will be next. You're next.
I feel the gender imbalances right now, for the record.
Okay, and thank you. That is noted. We are hosting a panel of six male candidates, so that has been noted. Thank you, Ms. Butterfly.
Hi. How are you all doing? I'm just happy to be here tonight, to stand before you all and to hear all the issues. I hear a lot of talking about, you know, hospital and also trades. Now, this kind of policy, not only the hospital would be closed, but you're going to build more morgue to put more body. Because when I just came to this country, I was doing construction in Jamaica, working, building all these hotels. I was told that I would never get a chance to be in the construction industry here because I am a black guy. And I said, well, let's see. It's happened that there's an opportunity open up for me because I know the scale. I could never lay bricks, but I was good at anything that they put me to. But I never know brick because in my country there was no bricks. Okay? Now, being out there as a young black boy, it was very hard. If I didn't know the toughness of growing up, if my dad didn't teach me that, look, don't listen to everything that people say. Just do what you have to do best. I went home a lot of time, I cried. The way these people treat you, because you do not look like them, and you do not speak their language. So I am saying that if you teach these young boys to be a bricklayer or whatever, and you put them amongst 5 or 6 Italian or 12 Portuguese, they will eat them up raw. Raw. This is the real truth. And I'm speaking because I'm in that industry, and I've seen the racism that in the construction industry. I'm speaking because I have that experience, and many more have that experience. In this community, there's many union around. And if you look at the recruit, at the Highway 50, which is the local 183, you count how many minority students are there. I was a product of that, and I've seen the racism.
So can I address the panel? Can we please answer the panel? Thank you for your question. I'll start with you, and we'll go this way. Just a moment. We want to discuss, the question is, how will you address the equity and the racism that community members are facing in their search for employment? And we'll go from Mr. Smitherman Back this way.
I have firsthand experience with the kinds of experiences this gentleman's talking about. I've worked in construction primarily as a truck driver, and I've been discriminated myself as a mungy cake. And I'm very well aware that the Portuguese are a very hard group to crack, less so with the Italian community. And in fact, this man is speaking the truth. There is a lot of discrimination amongst the unions. There's no question about it. How you would deal with it is make them aware of it and make them accountable for it. You can also go to the Human Rights Commission. And as I told you when I met you the other day and gave you my phone number, I have firsthand experience doing these kinds of disputes. And I'd certainly be able to handle it for you, as I said. These kinds of disputes need to be dealt with on a case-by-case basis. But the unions need to know that we're there. We need to get in their face. We need to tell them that there's a problem. And we need to report them to not just the Human Rights Commissions, but make the rest of the government agencies aware of it. Because the government agencies fund their apprenticeship programs. And if they're going to be discriminating against people, they're likely to see these funds dry up.
Thank you. Mr. Lapretti?
Just to mention all that, Aj, I had a dream. And my dream 20 years ago was to build a subway that will come to Killeen Finch, York University, and Janice Steels. That dream was put together because I realized that it would have to bring a lot of jobs, revitalization, changes in this community for the good. Because I saw the subways and what they did to other areas. Look at the Shepherd subway and look at the kind of development and kind of harmony and kind of things that they brought there. Now you say, what does this have to do with a subway? Well, I can tell you that the laws today will not allow the ordinary individual that is a good contractor, a conscientious contractor, a competent contractor to bid in any of the City of Toronto jobs in the helping of the subway. The conditions are there that they will never be allowed to do that unless you are sanctioned by a union or unless you are a union group. And that is very sad, because this community, whether we talk about the Turkish community, whether we talk about the Jamaican community, the Italian, the Portuguese, and others, have very competent, hardworking, conscientious contractors that could do a better job than any other group that I can know anywhere else. And statistically, I am not a counselor. I could not have called the people that were just employed, but I can tell you, from my own observation, these contractors that are beginning to get jobs for the subway do not come from the Jane Finch area, do not come from the Killeen Finch area, do not come from the Jane Steels area. And I'm very saddened by that, extremely saddened. And if I get on council, I will make sure that people will get their fair share in this community.
Thank you. Mr. Clark?
Well, I can remember speaking to you as you asked me my plan, and you try to poke holes in it. So I then told you that I'll put more cartoons on the television to distract the youth. And I was hoping for you to smile at me again. And as I spoke to you about building a trade school, you said to me, you know, the Portuguese would eat up our youth. And I agreed with you. And then we both came up with an answer, because it was in me, but you brought it out of me. That if we had more black-owned businesses where you don't send a, for example, black male to work with seven Portuguese guys. You do trades. You are a foreman. You have more experience. You start a business. And as these journeymen or apprenticeship people come to you, it's your business. For the past 3 years, the Driver Community Center has been leaking, right? They've been asking for the roof to be fixed, right? There's parts when it snows or when it rains, the kids can't dance in there because there's water and buckets of water in there. The way the city goes about fixing the roofs is that they take a bid. Whoever is the lowest bidder, they give it to them to fix the roof. If you have the lowest bid with your crew or your team of black males who are newly trained, you get that bid. There would be no competition for you. It's your business. You have the cheapest price. You get the deal. When the Italians first came to the country, they were very well discriminated against, like every other influx of migration that comes to this country. The Italian mafia made a lot of money through whatever they were doing. And then they came into this realization or this epiphany, you know what? Maybe construction is the best way for us. And they did that. And it worked flawlessly, if you ask me, right? If you get these marginalized youth who are involved in crime, who can't get themselves out of the cycle of violence and crime and poverty, and you train them and they're moving forward in life, I believe it would work. But it's not just about training them, it's about also giving them more businesses. And when they have more businesses, they don't have to worry about discrimination because they own their business.
And thank you, Mr. Clark.
I think that's just a start.
Thank you.
P.S. You can't really fight racism because racism is in the hearts of the people, and you can't read the hearts. Only the Almighty can read the hearts. So all we could do is, you know, like Mr. Smitherman said, is hold them accountable and document and report where we can.
Mr. Hussein, go ahead.
Well, I've dealt with my share of racism growing up. Try growing up during the Iraq War with a name like Hussein. You know, I've dealt with a lot of racism growing up. But what we need to do in terms of, you know, the unions and trying to connect the people with jobs that they're educated for is what we do is we educate them in a different form. Is educate them in the resources that are available for them. Myself, I've graduated from University of Toronto in equity studies, so this is my main focus. I've always been driven to connect those disadvantaged communities to the resources available to them. There are ways to get around this. What we have to do is use the resources here. In this case, it would be the resource of the counselor. Have the counselor talk directly with those involved with the unions and let them advocate for you. Connect them to groups that are equal opportunity employers. Make sure that the people that need the jobs, if there are marginalized groups, they have that opportunity and given a fair chance to get the jobs. What we do is we educate, we connect, and we utilize, and that's how we solve the problem.
Thank you. Mr. Gallagher?
With respect to Mr. Clark, I believe you can fight racism. And I think it's an abomination that anybody in our city has to put up with it. This is Toronto, diversity our strength. This is what we stand for. You can fight it, and we have to fight it, and we can't put up with anybody saying that it's not a problem that we can solve. The good news, as Mr. Smitherman pointed out, is that it's already against the law. It's against the law. We just have to make sure that it stops being tolerated at any level. That's how simple it is, and I want to address another part of the question, which I believe was talking about the language barrier being one of these things that drives us apart, and I think you're absolutely right. And I believe the city needs to take a better initiative about English language training for all recent immigrants who desire it so that we can capitalize on the skills that they're bringing, on the expertise that they're bringing to our city. This is how we turn things around for everybody in Toronto. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Peruzza?
Thank you so much. You know, when you were asking the question, I was thinking of my own experience. I'm a carpenter by training. I learned the skill from my dad. And I've worked in construction. And I remember when I worked in construction as a carpenter, I remember there were the Italian groups and there were the Portuguese groups and there were the Brazilian groups and everybody had a clique. It's regrettable, but sometimes there are language barriers and those things do happen where everybody connects to their own community and works within their own groups. But I believe that it has gotten a lot better than what it used to be like when I used to work actively as a carpenter. There's no question that we need to move it further forward. And I think that Mr. Smitherman talked about that. There are a number of different agencies and commissions that deal with issues of human rights and discrimination and so on and so forth. I believe the unions have made some significant strides within their own organizations to set up committees to provide that informal training to their workers and to create that understanding that cross communities and cross racial barriers and so on. And I see, for example, your case right now, working with Mr. Spadafora. I see the both of you actively engaged and working together. And I think that that's the way you do it. You do it by creating those linkages between people. It's similar to the experience I talked about earlier on the street on Topcliffe that I had some time ago. excuse me, how people from different communities connect with each other. We need to continue to encourage those links. Not divide people, not set them apart, but create those understanding, create those linkages, and bring people together in that way. And I think that that's ultimately the way you deal with those issues. But it's regrettable that in construction, where often language is a very significant barrier, you know, Portuguese folks speak Portuguese, they hang with Portuguese, they stay together. Brazilians do the same thing. To some degree, the Italians have moved on because many of them have picked up the language, the English language, and they're able to sort of, you know, work with other folks a little bit better. But regrettably, it's an industry where some of those divides still exist. So we need to do those kinds of things in bringing people together, in creating those understandings so that they better work together.
Thank you. We have at the mic Ms. Butterfly. Is that okay? Madam Butterfly?
No, whatever works. Go ahead. Okay, gentlemen. In terms of succession, what is your way or what's your plan in getting more women involved with government? When we look at our community, a lot of these women are making a lot of decisions, communities on their back, our young people are in jail, and we're the ones who are out here continuing on and moving on community. What will be your plan in engaging women in this process?
You understood the question? I'm going to go with Antonius. We'll move over this way towards Mr. Smitherman, and then we'll come back.
I don't want no one to laugh at me, but first I'd like to...
Antonius, timekeep.
Sorry. I got a quote from a great young lady, and she's here somewhere. She's going to laugh at me. She said that women are the true warriors of society. And I can't remember how much time that I've said that, and it has saved me. So thank you, wherever you are, right? But beyond that, in my campaigning, I've realized that I've reached out to a lot of people to help me. And my team is comprised of 99.999999 women, right? I'm the only male. I'm the only man on my team. Even my very mother is with me, right? And this seems to remind me that when I get into office, that I'm going to have to hire 99.999 women.
You should let right? One of them stand in your place.
No, it's okay. My mom would, because she has a bigger heart than I do. But in any event, I would always fight for equity with women. That's naturally for me, right? Because I find men, and forgive me, guys, are very egotistical. They always want to have a competition, a fight, and work never gets done, right? So at the end of the day, I always fight for my sisters because I don't forget that it's my single mother who raised me in this country with 5 children. And when I look to a strong role model, I see my mother, not my father.
Mr. Lapretti?
It's great to be beside someone as thoughtful and at the same time entertaining as Mr. Clark. It's a pleasure. In terms of succession planning, I totally believe in it. I surround myself with a lot of young people, both female and males. I've already given you indication of my work in the community. As I said earlier before, the first black female planner for the city of Toronto came from the Jane Finch community, and proudly so. The first male black planner for the city of Toronto came from Kenneth Finch. I had the pleasure of mentoring Mr. Antonius Clark for a bit of time and maybe inspired them a bit to go in and enter into politics as well. And I have had at least 5 young people right now at the medical center that are getting inspired to go into a medical field, where they go into become doctors or nurses or other in other ways. It's a small contribution. It's a very small contribution. But if every other politician has done at least a third of what I contribute in this area, I would be very, very happy. It takes the small things that can come for big things, and I certainly am committed to that.
Thank you. Mr. Smitherman, thank you.
Well, I think if you notice the seats at the provincial and federal level, as well at the city level, you will see an increase in women bit by bit. I think that it's important for a prudent councillor or anybody in politics, if he sees a woman with the appropriate qualities, whether she's involved in activism or lobbyists or she's a pillar of the community, to in fact give her an internship that works in her hours. Typically, women have more on their plate than men. Men are usually drinking beer and fighting, and the women are at home cleaning and looking after the kids. And those stereotypes are maybe a little bit humorous, but in fact, they're a little bit true. So I think any politician that has the right place should be, in fact, working a little harder to give them internships when possible.
Thank you. Mr. Perezza? Sorry.
Yeah, upon immediately after getting elected, I started an internship program in my office and created basically 4, 5, 6 spots for 3-month periods where we actively recruit predominantly young women from the community to gain an experience down at the city and get to know the city, get to know the city apparatus and how it works, and then and hopefully move on from there. A number of them are currently working at the city and working for counselors, other counselors, on a full-time basis, and some of them have stayed with me. Some of them are now running programs in the community. One young woman is actively organizing at James Cardinal McGuigan Young People and in a mentorship program. Another young woman is actively organizing within her community in the area as well. So that's, I think, how you do it. You go out, you actively recruit, and elections are wonderful opportunities to do that. We have been doing that on an ongoing basis, and always in the hope that young, bright females will come forward, will connect to those things, will gain those experiences, and then translate those experiences into your meaningful contributions, both within the community and for themselves.
Thank you. Mr. Gallagher?
Well, it's I know you're feeling the gender disparity here. You mentioned it. And it's a sad, sad truth that decisions tend to be made by those who show up. I'm not at all ashamed to say that I was actually a women's studies major at York University, and I learned so much from the passion of the women. Thanks, Anthony. From the passion of the women that I've seen.
I stood 2 classes and one time, and then I don't know, the women ran me out.
Okay.
Oh, they ran. They, you know what? It's think Mr. Brown times 1,000. The passion of politically engaged women. It's actually a really impressive thing to behold. And I think that a lot of the problem is going to be, not the problem, the solution to the problem is going to be listening to the women's groups that are already out there in our community. The women like yourself, who, I'm sure, who are already politically aware, organized, ready to speak to people, make changes, and get involved. Decisions are made by those who show up, but we can make sure that more women show up, and that's how changes start to be made.
Thank you. Mr. Hussein?
You know, I thought I was the only one, but I actually did women's studies in university as well, and along with my equity studies degree. You know,
maybe it's not so bad.
You know what? It's all of part of how you engage the community, and you have to learn the issues that are. And women are 50% of the population, but
52.
I was approximating.
Okay. Yeah. Just kidding. Well, no, it's a fact. 52.
But yeah. But you know, they carry a lot of the work of life. You know, my mother, she comes home and she does her job, and then she comes home and she does a lot of unpaid labor. That is not accounted for you know, the income in the community and where that is generated. But you know what? What we need to do is actually engage the women and the women's groups, and to connect them to the resources that are available, and empower them, show them that it is possible that they can do the same things that any man can do, and just show them that the opportunity for them to do that. Just showing them, you know, personally, when I started running for this position, I have many friends that are women that see that I can get out there and do something, and they become engaged more than they've ever even thought they even could be. It's just about inspiring the people to do the things that they know they can do but never thought they could do.
Thank you.
Could I say quickly, I forgot to say that, because I heard two words, succession plan, as you move forward, what you do for the past. No, not at all. I did human rights and Canadian minorities and criminology and all that jazz. But in any event, the new executive director of Friends in Trouble, the organization that I started, is a woman. So to me, succession plan means as you move forward to a next place in life, what do you do with the thing that you left behind? Or, you know, how do you keep people on the same level, right? And I think that's succession plan in not theology or theory, but in action.
Thank you. I would like to take a moment to just address our next person come up to the mic, and I'm looking for Ziggy. Just before you go, I just want to keep time keep. I know that Mr. Lopretti has an appointment. We're going to address Ziggy's question. I'm going to ask you to keep it to 30 minutes. Please answer the question. You're right. 30 seconds. Hold on. Excuse me. Just hold on. 30 seconds. And then we have two more questions from DIA, and then we'd like to wrap up. But we'd like to, we have some questions that our community has presented, and we think we need to address them. Go ahead, Mr. Ziggy. Thank you.
All right. Firstly, all I've been seeing in this community is just the residents of the community have been stolen from. Everything that they have been working on in this community and everything that they built have been stolen. And they don't have any assets within the community. And they are the one that's keeping the community together. Everybody come in, take what they want, and go about their business. My question is to Metro Housing. There's tons of residents that have been living in Metro Home for years, paying their rent. And at the end of those years, if they can't pay the rent, they gotta go. And I know that now down in downtown, they have the new Metro Homes where they're gonna have condos attached to them so people can come in and get condos. Now, if they're gonna do that, why can't they have rent to own? Why can't all these people are putting their money into these homes? This is their community that they're working on. They're going to have people that are going to come in and buy condos, and they're not going to own their space. Why are they doing, why is the Metro system not organizing something that makes these residents have an asset? That's just one question. I don't want to squeeze in the next question. Tied in. The youths that are in prison right now, that are going to be coming out, they said as long as youths have a criminal record, they can't get employment without a pardon. Okay, so what are they going to do? What do you have in store for them? What are you planning for them to do? It's a pardon does not do the work. A pardon doesn't stop a youth from committing a criminal offense. I think that's a dumb ban to have, once you have a criminal record, you have to get a pardon. Because you can get a pardon today and tomorrow and you commit a next crime. What are you going to do about all those youths that are going to come out of prison and they can't get a job because they have a criminal record?
Okay, so the question is two-part. And thank you, Mr. Ziggy, because our next question from Dia was regarding housing. So we'll address housing. What are your plans regarding social housing and the fact that many residents live within social housing for many years, none of them become homeowners? And the second question was, how are we going to get youth employed without just using the pardon system so they can access employment? Okay, so can I have Mr. Perusa?
I agree. I think what's occurring at Regent Park is the way that we move forward, in that we continue to maintain the affordable housing stock for people who need affordable housing, who need to get into the housing, because we have long lineups of people waiting to get in. And with those kinds of revitalization, you both rebuild the affordable housing stock, plus you build new housing where people can move into, people that can move from Toronto community housing that are at market rents that can move into home ownership and into condos and into co-ops and in those other forms of housing that we are creating. Regent Park is the model. We need to make it the success story. Then we, you know, Lawrence Park needs to follow suit. And up here, Edgeley Village and in our communities and Fir Grove and these other places need to be revitalized as well. Because otherwise, if we don't do that, the current housing stock that we have will continue to crumble, and there won't be enough capital resources, there won't be enough money to maintain them at a decent level. So,
Thank you.
Okay, since Mr. Perusa got half of it, I'll take the other half and keep it to 30 seconds. As far as employment for troubled youth, obviously, a big part of that is going to be the expansion of the transit system is going to make it easier for them to get to their employment. Keeping it affordable is a huge problem. I will say something about the housing, too. We need more pressure on not just public housing, but on all landlords to keep up the standards of housing, because a lot of it is... It needs work. Let's just leave it at that. We need pressure from city council on everybody who controls housing to keep it livable.
Thank you.
30 seconds.
Thank you.
Okay. Well, I'm going to speak to the rent to own. I believe that, you know, owning property is a right that all the citizens and all the residents of Canada do deserve, and we do need to promote more of that. And there are programs out there that the government is offering it, which is just we need to inform the public of the availability of these programs so they can take advantage of that. It's information to make well-deserved decisions. If you don't know about it, you won't take advantage of it. Just to let the community know, and that's what I'll do.
Thank you.
Let's be real. I think a lot of people are forgetting the fact that housing is supposed to be temporary, not permanent. So you're not supposed to get in there and stay there forever. I'd like to see that there is more inspiration in the community where they could take advantage of that temporariness and move forward to rent to own their own places. My mom came to this country, single mother, five children. She didn't take us to housing. She was on social assistance. Sorry for putting your business out there, Ma. But she fought hard to keep her integrity and to keep moving forward. I'd like to see with the housing that is broken down and rebuilt. Regent Park was built off a Chicago model. They knew that that model would bring poverty, crime, and desperation. They brought it here, and then they expanded it to Jane and Finch. They knew that it was going to cause a mess. They still brought it here. Now they want to follow Regent Park and build condos and gentrificate us, send us to wherever else in the city they want to, and give back the condos to brand new people who could afford condos. We need more co-op housing, where people could be inspired to do more because their neighbors are a little bit more, you know, progressive. But housing is temporary. And as long as housing becomes a place where people think it's permanent, you're always going to have a great waiting list for people who can't get on because others are still on it. You understand what I'm saying? Secondly, with youth who are coming out of jails, I believe, Ziggy, that's what you're asking, I want to see that, like I said earlier, that there is more training for the trades and what have you, because a lot of these guys can't go back to university. They don't have the capacity to, nor do they want to. They need hands-on work that's going to be good-paying jobs. And also... Sorry, my last point. You almost made me lose it, Crystal.
Go ahead. Did I catch you?
A good reference. Because I have a friend who just came out of jail. He just got killed by the police. But he have a principal that loved him all his life. She got him a job in a battery recycling plant, and he was just about to get his forklift licensing. The only reason why that the owner hired him was because he had a good reference. As a counselor, I would take it upon myself to be that good reference.
Thank you, Mr. Lopretti, please.
Very, very quickly, there is some merit to what you're saying, to the question. That is something that I had initiated about 20 years ago in my two-year proposal for Jane and Finch. There are 50,000 people on a waiting list for housing. The city is not going to build very much more. We need to find alternative ways to meet the demands of people that need housing on a temporary basis. And that rent to own is probably one of the better ways to generate additional money to build additional housing to get people moving on.
Thank you. Mr. Smitherman?
Well, I don't mean to be evasive, but there's two items that we need to understand because we're treating the symptoms rather than the cause. Firstly, we're overtaxed, and rent has gone up almost 70% in the last 20 years. So we're paying too much rent, and we're paying too much tax. We need to go to the federal and provincial governments to deal with that. But with respect to people getting out of jail and having issues that they have to face with, for every $1 million we spend on educating and training minorities, we get $2.8 million back. And half of that goes right back into the community. And we need to make the all three levels of government understand that. So certainly there has to be special education and training for people that are coming out of jail. They have special needs, and they need special support as well. If I become counselor, every single item that comes across my desk is a file. I'll handle it the same way a law office would, and I'll make sure that the file is dealt with from beginning to end properly. And if a person needs a reference and he needs a hand, then he's going to get it from me.
Thank you. So Mr. Lopretti has to go, and I'd like to address a question regarding the subway system. There's been a lot of talk about the subway system coming to this area, and I want to know, we at DIA want to know, what is the plan for each councillor to ensure that the jobs that we've talked about, you each have mentioned it in speaking, the livelihood that's going to come, the vibrancy that's going to come to the neighborhood via the subway system, how are we going to ensure that Jane and Finch residents, not University Heights or not any other community, but the people who love and own this community for the past 30, 40 years, are going to be able to access jobs in this, access jobs from the subway system? And how are we going to see that the subway system brings progress to this community? It doesn't employ people who work here for the day and then go home. Mr. Lopretti, I'll let you speak first.
Thank you. I, as I said, I always believed in the subway system coming to this community. Unlike other candidates on the panel who accused me of lying in 2003 to the community for political purposes, the subway is coming and the subway will be here. I was not lying. I was not. Misleading people. It's a reality. It's there, and I take credit, that little credit, for 20 years of my hard labor. How will I assure it? Right now, it's so intricate that the vast majority of the contracts, as I understand it, as I see it, are going towards the big companies. You need a leader, someone that will be able to sit down with some of these contractors in order to get all the subcontracts in place from this community. How are we going to change this community? Very simple. I don't want additional high-rise buildings for residential community. Why can we not attract a government building in this area? Why don't we have the Ministry of Immigration and Citizenship? Why don't we have the Ministry of Justice or a building that could be good in running this community? Why do we always have to bring in balance? Because right now you have so many people that live here and very few job opportunities in this community. So we need to provide the government incentives plus the private sector incentive that will allow our contractors to hire young people, to hire from this community, and build a better and safe community, as I see it.
Thank you. Can I have Mr. Smitherman? Thank you. I recognize that you have to leave. Can I have Mr. Smitherman, and then we'll go back this way. Thank you.
What needs to be done, and I've had firsthand experience with this, dealing with particularly the operators' union as well as the laborers' union, is that their doors are open to negotiation. They will train. They do have apprentice programs, and you can negotiate with them. So if you ask them to employ X amount of apprentices from the area, they will in fact cooperate with that. The other unions, I would imagine, I'm speculating a little bit, I'm sure that they will reason as well. But I should think that the operators union and the laborers union has the most amount of people probably working on that project.
Thank you. Mr. Clark?
I feel like I'm on repeat now. I would like to get a trade school in the community to get the skills of the people higher. If the people in the community do not have the skills, you could bring anything here. They are not employable. By giving the people the skills and the necessary education, it increased their employability. By increasing their employability, they are more likely to get the jobs. When they are more likely to get the jobs and they get the jobs, there is less crime. So things like the subway, you bring a subway, you spend billions of dollars, the people who get the jobs don't work here, so the money doesn't stay here. We need to get our people more employed. And another thing that I would love to advocate for, but can't because won't be able to directly do, is to make sure that when people go to jail, that they're not sitting around learning to be better criminals, that they're actually learning in jails, so they come out educated, so that they are educated in the community as a community. They're more employable leaving jail as opposed to more criminalized.
Thank you, Mr. Clark. Mr. Hussein?
Okay, we need to look at this situation in two ways. The subway is a resource in construction, and the subway is a resource after construction. First thing we need to do is actually try, as Mr. Smithman was saying, get more apprenticeship programs to use the subway as a conduit to get our youth and the people in our community skilled. So that way, after the construction of the subway, we'll have a more skilled labor force, and they'll be able to work anywhere in the city through the experience that they've learned. Now, we have to look long-term. After the subway has been created, we're going to have increased traffic and availability for people to come from all over the city right here easily to our community. We have to address the businesses, organize these businesses to create an uplifted community, something that will be able to promote itself, to create an interest in our area, to make sure that people want to stop at the subway stops in our area so that we can improve the quality of our community overall for not only the residents, but for everyone around the city.
Thank you. Mr. Gallagher?
As my fellow candidates have said, we need to recognize what the subway is. It's a way of connecting us with the city, the greater city. With that connectiveness, so much is possible. It's a matter of making it affordable. It's a matter of keeping it affordable for the residents of this community. And, of course, it's the job of the councillor to ensure that when it's being constructed, of course, there's community involvement. That's community employment. It only makes sense. That's what we're going to do. That's what the council does. Beyond that, it's about using what the subway represents to help us all.
Thank you. Mr. Perezza?
Thank you. I talked a bit earlier about how we are changing the format on how local youth can participate in active construction projects undertaken by the city and the agencies, boards, and commissions. So while the subway is being built, one would expect that local youth will participate in that and actively participate in the construction of the subway. But the subway brings a lot more than just the actual physical construction. For example, we now have a new plant moving into the area called Apollo, a high-end cosmetics manufacturer. The plant is going to be built from scratch at the end of Pond Road, right across from the university. And I believe one of the reasons for that is the anticipation of the subway, so that people can get to these workplaces via transit in an expeditious way. That plant will employ 400 people. Those jobs will be made available also for the, I presume, for the local community and open to all. As the university grows out, for example, they just built a new a research facility at York, a research facility that connects to the pharmaceutical industry as well, which is beginning to develop a pharmaceutical park on the other side of Keele Street. Those are all well-paying jobs that type of activity creates. York University has applied for a medical school. They want to build a medical school, providing more educational opportunities for people locally. They want to expand their engineering program. So the subway and transit will bring all of that renewal, that type of activity, and we need to make it accessible to the local community, not just in terms of the actual physical construction of the subway, but in housing the workplaces and the workspaces that are a result of the renewal and the growth that activity brings. And I believe that the entire community and your local councillor needs to work hard to make sure that the wealth generated by that activity permeates the entire community. I'll give you one little idea that I've been working on. But we are going to come to a community consultation. For example, the Steeles Station, I would like to have named, instead of Steeles West, Black Creek Pioneer Village, because it should be a destination for people. People across the city and tourists to this town should know that that's a destination place, so that when they look at the subway map, they say, oh, Black Creek Pioneer Village. And if that attracts more people from across the city, and if it attracts some tourists, that creates wealth locally.
Thank
that
you.
That hopefully the local community will be able to take advantage of. Thanks.
Thank you very much. Can I have Dennis to the microphone, please? Dennis? Okay, so may I have Tony? Oh, Dennis, are you coming? Okay, thank you. Please state your question.
I just want to ask one or two questions, and I know I've
so heard, does your son.
Yeah. I've heard a series of statements over the time I've been here, and I know that I don't know that the person named there, John. I know you did mention something about probably a councillor might have done something, but he's trying to do A, B, C, and D. He's a mayor person. I tell you from my side point of view that this same councillor you're trying to refer to helped us out here when we can't get our councillor here to help us. So you got to have know what you're doing and what you're saying when you come to a community like this, okay? And that's that. As a former military person and an educator, and I've used those things that I know in my life to work in the community right here. So it's kind of interesting to hear many people talking and saying what you've been saying all along. If there is no access, and I know Jamal talked about this, if we don't have access to the person that should be that should be bridging a gap between community and the city. If you don't have access to that person, you're going to have a lot of trouble in the process. The community will not run well as per the community agencies that are running. They will not run well. And I know this for a fact. All we'll be getting will be few organizations that are either friend or friend of friend that are getting everything keep going on and on and on. And
Mr.
that is
Dennis,
not good.
Mr. Dennis, can you phrase it in a question?
Okay,
please?
So the question I actually have at the end of the day is that, are you guys saying that if you go in, or who will be able to give a better assurance that you go in, we will have access to you as our counselor? That is very important.
Thank you. We did have a question about transparency and consultation, and Mr. Dennis has asked, how can we access you and know that we will be able to count on you and access you as a counselor? I would like to start here and go across. Please keep your response to 30 seconds.
Set up community hours, which I've done. Have community consultation, community meetings by the dozens and dozens and dozens and dozens across the entire ward, which I've done. Send out voice broadcasts, voice broadcasts to do tree plantings, park cleanups, flower plantings, which I've done. Essentially letting people know where you are throughout the year. I think that's you know, being visible in the community, attending the different parts of the community. I don't think that there's a building, a court, a crescent, a street, a park, a church in this area that I have not attended at one time or another. It's you make yourself available in those ways, and I believe that you connect and continue to reconnect with people.
Thank you.
And I've tried to do that.
Thank you. Mr. Gallagher?
It's about discussions exactly like this one, and as I've said, as a counselor, I'll have an open-door policy so that I can listen directly to whatever your concerns are. That's the most, if anybody has a better suggestion about what we can do, again, I'll have an open-door policy so you can let me know about it personally. But you're right, we need absolute transparency. We need to be accountable to our constituents. That's absolutely what I stand for. I'm here to be your representative.
Thank you. Mr. Hussein?
Well, in terms of resources, I'm a resource coordinator by trade, so I understand the need to get the people to what they need. I'll make myself more available. I live in this community. I'm in Driftwood, Sentinel, almost every day. So I'll be around. So if you need to ask any questions, I'll be there. I'll come around the neighborhoods and hold forums within the community in open spaces more than once a year. I'll come out almost, I'll be there anyway. So you can come and contact me anytime. I have my phone on me all the time, so you can contact me any time during the day. So if there's any concerns that the community needs or any individual has, feel free to contact me and I'll be there.
Thank you. Mr. Clark?
I feel like the bad guy because I always find myself attacking Mr. Peruzza, but he is the incumbent, so that's where I guess I must attack. Mr. Peruzza rides his bike around the community. I do commend him for that. But I don't think Mr. Peruzza rides his bike into the marginalized community. When I say that, I mean Driftwood, Shoreham, Lane, the people know. And I think that they're just as important as anyone else. When I was knocking doors, I could have chose to knock Palisades, Shoreham, Driftwood.
I've been taking my motorcycle into those communities.
Because you want to get out quicker, right? In any event, I realized that, you know what, me just knocking the marginalized community is not noble. So I took myself to every corner, every crescent, every avenue, every drive, every court, and I knocked the Italian community, I knocked the Black community, the Asian community. It was a lot of work, but it needed to be done because everyone needs to know who their next counselor is going to be. Secondly, on the advanced polls at McGuigan on Sunday, as they were closing, I saw yourself, you know who I'm speaking of, and your friend Richard. And he said to me, I want to have a meeting with you, and I'm going to call you. And I laughed at him, sure, and you remember. He says, I have your direct number. And I started to laugh even more, because I wanted to know, what is my direct number? On every piece of literature that I've put out, it is my direct number, right? It's not my assistance number or my campaign office number. It's my phone number. And the problem is, at all hours of the night, I have people in distress calling and saying A, B, and C, and it's my direct number. Some people are like, oh my gosh, it's your real number. Is this Antonius? Oh, Mr. Clark, how are you? And I will maintain that when I get into office. I'm not planning on changing my number or giving my cell phone away. You have my number. And every house in this constituency has my number. Call me and I'm there for you.
Thank you, Mr. Clark. Mr. Smitherman, thank you.
Well, my fellow candidates have all made some good points, and I'm left to sweep up after them, I suppose. But I have been a tractor-trailer driver for over 30 years. It was a 7-day-a-week, 24-hour job, and I consider being a counselor exactly the same thing. I think you've got to have an emergency plan in your back pocket in case one of those tank farm blow up, and you need to be able to deal with the constituents 7 days a week, 24 hours a day. I haven't made it to every crescent and every court, but I've been in probably 80% of the high rises. I'm not shy about going into any of them. I made the high rises a focus of my campaign. My website I've been using as sort of media venue, and my home phone number and cell phone number are on it. And I have had some people call me, and I've helped them out. Certainly, if you're not going to be available, you definitely need somebody that's capable to take your call as a counselor. There's no question about it.
Thank you. Is this Rama? Hi. Please state your question.
Okay. My name is Rama, and I'm a resident of Jane and Driftwood. the past 21 years. I'm 23, so pretty much that's my whole life. My question is related to that community that I'm really proud to come from. Like Mr. Brown said today, there's a lot of truth to his comment in terms of him feeling like he's the real counselor in the community, because when the community is crying, when the community is grieving, when we don't have anyone to stand up there to be leaders in our community, when our real counselors are not to be found, or they're here for 21 years, Mr. Lapruti's not here, but 21 years, yet they do not respond to the real issues that we face, and Mr. Peruzza, who also continuously neglects the community, we're here for one another. My question is related to one such issue that is, for as long as I lived here, has not been answered, and that's police brutality. My question is to everybody on the panel, but specifically to Driftwood, where I come from, Mr. Peruzza, where were you when Operation Cryptic happened? And mothers and sons and babies were hurt and were pounded by police. You brought Tavis to our community. Where was Mr. Lapruti in the 4 years that he was not here as counselor when he wants to come back and be counselor in our community? Where was he? I ask that question, and I ask each of you. You've talked about representation, but you have not chosen to speak of it truthfully. Representation is the color of my skin. It's the color of Antonius Clark's skin. And if we believe in social justice, if we believe in anything, then we will elect Clark for counselor. And my question is, what are you going to do to respond to the police that continuously harass us and stop us? You have not handled it, and I want to hear a clear answer. Not statistics, not history. I want to know, what have you done? And if you're new to the community, like Nasib Hussein, like John Gallagher, like Arthur Smitherman, you're new to our community. We do not know you. We have not seen you. You may have gone to the schools, but we do not know you. You have not done enough. So my question is, if elected counselor, what will you do to handle police brutality in our community in a meaningful way?
Thank you. Mr. Smitherman, go ahead.
I think I made it quite plain, and you can check my website and see that, in fact, I have addressed this situation in the speeches that I made to Rima Ministries. And, in fact, it is in my social and economic prospectus to, in fact, work with the police to ensure that they are not adversarial and more oriented to dealing with disputes in a kindly and humanistic fashion. I think I spoke previously about speaking to Robin Ebu, who runs the Afro-Canadian Mediation Center, and in fact, he's already working with the police to do the very same thing.
Thank you.
And I've had numerous meetings, in fact, with him, and we're very much on the same wavelength. So although I'm not, as you say and as you accuse me of, being aware of such things, in fact, I have rolled up my sleeves and I have talked to members of the community, and I am apprised of criminal justice. I took a police, prisons, and rehabilitation course at Laurentian University, and in fact, criminal justice is one of my specialties, so I do feel qualified to deal with the matter.
Thank you.
I'd like to make it clear that I respect your bias, but you do have a bias towards me, and we should put that out there. In doing the work that I've been doing, I have always been called into situations like this. I almost gave up on my campaign a week and a half ago because a mother called me at 6 o'clock in the morning crying, saying that the police just shot and killed her son, which I went to school with from grade 1. And me being so emotionally charged, it was a magnet to me. So I had to go there, and I had to take up my place in being a spokesperson for the family. I also had to then get a lawyer to do an autopsy, to do a second autopsy, to sue the police, because this young man was shot and killed practically in his sleep. He woke up, they shot him, and that's that. The gun was found he had a gun in his home. It was found in his living room, but there was no reason why they should have shot and killed him. 2 months ago, Junior Mannin was pulled over on the Pond Road at York University. He was chased by police and then beaten to death. The police said he had a heart attack. That's 2 in 1 month. There's obviously a case of police brutality. And if you look at the numbers, it gets worse. In Driftwood Court, a young man was shot and killed. There was a gunfight, they said, but people are being shot and killed by the police. And when they're not being shot and killed, they're being beaten up, right? And it takes power to fight power. You can't be a normal person fighting power, because what will happen is they'll criminalize you too. They'll pull you over, they'll plant things on you. Before you know it, you're a criminal as well. I know firsthand. So by being a counselor and holding the police accountable, it's a different kind of fight. And I'm not here to fight the police. I'm here to hold the few bad apples accountable to their actions, because we need police in our community. They are agents of the state to uphold the law. But we do not need people who got picked on in high school coming out as police officers and bullying our community, because finally they got a chance to.
Thank you. Mr. Hussein.
First of all, I'd like to address the fact that I've been in this community for 23 years, so I'm not new to the community. Secondly, the community is more than your face and Antonius's face, because there are multicultural society right here. There's more than just one or two cultures here. There's a facet. And third, yeah, well, there's lots. And we can't just look at it as just black and white. It's not. There's lots of colors here, and we're all disadvantaged.
I'm sorry, but I have to say, when you look at who the police are beating up, it's not white males, not Asian males, it's black males. The last two people who were killed by police were black males. Forgive me, Nasib, no one is being racist or saying that it's only blacks, but even when you go to jails, the most people that are in the jails are the black males. So let's just put that there. One love, my brother. I love you.
Well, let me get to the policing issue, though. Well, just including herself and Antonius, excluding myself and everyone else on the panel, and we're a racist. We have culture too.
Thank you.
Okay.
Okay. I just would like to bring it back. We have Mr. Hussein speaking. Let him finish his comments, please. And again, we're trying to keep it down. This debate is going on, and I'd like to finish with the last question. Continue.
In terms of policing, yes, there is an issue with police brutality, and I've dealt with it in the past. But the way to the solution is not through trying to accuse individual people. We have to address the system. Educate the police officers and work within the system to get something done. If there's somebody out there making these issues public and working on their behalf, advocating, then we can have some change. If this is not being done now, then it has to be done better. We can't work and just throw out accusations. That's not going to do anything. It's just going to increase the divide between the police and the residents. And that's just not the way it's going to help.
Audience, please. It's hard if you are a panelist to respond to all the questions coming at you. It's not the context of a regular conversation. So I'm just going to let Mr. Hussein, he's finished. I'm going to move forward to Mr. Gallagher and then Mr. Perusa.
What about me? I want to close an argument, please.
Okay, Mr. Brown, I love and respect you. I can't let you have the closing argument. Okay.
Because Mr. Lafferty is not here, and there is an answer. Me individual have to take part.
Okay. So, Mr. Brown, I will let you speak.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Mr. Gallagher, please go ahead.
I know it's getting late, guys. Tempers are running a little hot. I just want to say, I believe I've been very clear on this issue. Racism cannot be tolerated. And if you didn't think that I meant the police, I absolutely did. I mentioned we need to put an end to racial profiling. I said in my opening statement we need a full review of policing strategy for this community and for the city at large. I absolutely agree with you about the extent and the character of the problem. Something does need to be done, and I hope that you won't hold my skin color against me as far as my commitment to ending racism and police brutality in this city and in this community. If you have any doubts, come into my office as soon as I'm elected. We'll work together on getting this solved. Okay?
Thank you. Mr. Perusa?
Thank you very much. One of the, I guess, the big divides in the community, if there is a divide, is between the police and the community at large. I think it's getting better. Is it perfect? No, it's not. Are there issues? Yes, there are. The police force has been changing over time. I remember a time when most police officers, when I was a child, were white males. I look at the community now, and I look at the police now in the community. Is a big difference. I know that an officer of color started a revitalization project at York Woods Grand Ravine just simply by running into one of the tenants and saying, "If I help you, can we plant some flowers together?" And the elderly woman said to the officer, "Yes." And it sprung a whole revitalization project.
The question is,
it's about relationships. It's about the relationship between the police and the community and how you foster a better relationship. That's what the question is.
Well, the question actually was about police brutality.
Correct.
I want to clarify. And I think what our question asker was trying to say that it's not a relationship, it's not a fair and equitable relationship. And what she's saying is, what can you as counselor do
precisely
to make sure that black children, as she identified in the community, are not being brutalized by the police?
As a counselor,
that's what she asked.
When I first got elected, I started up a bike race locally with the local police. With the police, I brought different departments, the city, the police, and so on. We, in the first year, gave away and brought at-risk youth to work with the police, to be trained by the police, bringing the police out into the community. We gave at-risk youth over 100 bicycles. Over the last 3 years, I believe we're somewhere over around 500 or 550 bikes and helmets and training that we've given to local youth. That's a lot of youth. And that's a lot of contact between the police and the local youth. Building relationships, getting them to know and get to know each other, bringing the police out into the community. Now, so that's one side of the equation, is fostering those relationships. And we've been working hard to do that. On the other side of the equation, when brutality occurs, when harassment occurs, one of the big deficits that happens is, you know, and it's a problem that we all have, is witnesses coming forward and saying, "Hey, I saw that officer do that to that individual." Because when we get those situations, then those people, those officers who do those things will be punished. But we, all of us, and we will all speak out in that regard. And I will be the first. Excuse me. And I would be the first.
Sorry, Rama, can you please, Rama, if you want to follow up, please come to the mic. Please come to the mic. Just come. Okay, thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, I thank you for your comments. The time is 8:50, and this venue has to close in 10 minutes. So I'm going to ask the counselors, the last question of the night is, should another counselor win, who would be your choice and why? I'm going to... Okay. So, I'm sorry, Mr. Smitherin, are you leaving?
No, please.
Okay.
All due respect to you, I thank everybody for coming out, and I appreciate it.
Just a moment, Mr. Brown.
But that's a question for a loser.
Thank you. I'd like to acknowledge that Mr. Smitherman has left the debate. Mr. Clark.
Well, I'd like if, to...
Sorry, wanna, just a moment. Just a moment.
Hey, watch
audience,
how you speak to my mother.
Just a minute, Mr. Clark.
Be gentle
Clark.
With mom, Mr. Smitherman. She's my mom.
Mr. Clark.
It's okay, mom.
Mr.
Don't be emotional.
Clark,
I know you love me.
Mr. Clark. Sorry. Mr. Smitherman has every right to leave the premises if he wants. You are the informed voter and make your decisions accordingly.
That's right.
So I would like to give the floor to those who are left here to finish, and that is Mr. Clark, and going forward, coming towards me. Thank you. Right, Mr. Brown.
Okay,
but just excuse me. Excuse me. Again, I really would like to close for the evening. I'd like the candidates to address the last question. Mr. Brown, you spoke earlier, and so I'm going to give them a chance to speak.
Mr. Brown, I'm happy I'm not in your hands. I'm in God's hands. I think that's better hands. In any event... No. You're being a bully now. Don't be a bully, Mr. Unofficial Counselor. I hear you, but I rather be in God's hands.
Mr. Clark, just a minute. Mr.
Nobody,
Brown.
He's been ranting all night.
I know. Mr. Brown.
Come on.
Mr. Brown.
I understand. I understand.
Mr. Brown, excuse me. We're going, DIA is going to have more debates in the community. We are going to organize, and we are going to be able to make this opportunity. But Mr. Brown, you've spoken more than once for the evening, so I want to give the candidates an opportunity to close for the evening. Thank you respectfully. Mr. Clark, go ahead.
I'd like to answer on behalf of Mr. Lopretti. He told me that when he goes door to doors and people say, if I don't vote for you, he said, vote for Clark, because, you know, I trust that he'll be the best in the community.
Mr.
But
Clark,
Arthur
that's
inspired
not the
me.
Question.
I got you. Arthur inspired me, you know. That is a question for losers, and I'm sure that I'm going to taint the answer of everyone else after me. I voted on Sunday, and I voted Clark for counselor. So I'll tell everyone, vote Clark for counselor. If I wasn't voting for me, I wouldn't be running, and I'd be apathetic.
Thank you. Please, Mr. Hussein, can you answer the question?
Well, I'm going to answer that question. I'm not afraid to tell you that, you know, if I wasn't voting for myself, I would actually vote for someone who lives in this community and somebody who's grown up and understands the needs. And I see two young gentlemen sitting right next to me, and my vote would go to one of them because I believe that those who live within the community can understand the needs.
Thank you. Mr. Gallagher.
I tell you what, Mr. Brown's got my vote, I think. More seriously, guys, I can't make a recommendation like that because I have... that much respect for every single person who has been sitting at this table, whether they left or not. Guys, vote your consciences. Vote for who you believe would be the best. But honestly, we all have a vision of a positive community. That's all I'll say.
Thank you. Mr. Peruzza?
Thank you very much. Leadership is about hard work. It's about commitment. It's about determination. It's about ideas. And it's about not being afraid to lead. It's about integrity. It's about dignity. It's about all of those things. And quite frankly, I don't know these gentlemen, none of them, well enough to be able to say, this is the person that has those qualities, or that is the person that has those qualities. I don't, you know, I guess
okay,
to some
so
degree I'm in the, I'm in the,
Mr. I'm Peruzza, in the camp.
Yes.
So you don't have enough knowledge of them to vote.
I don't know any of them well
okay.
enough, and I certainly wouldn't vote for the guy who left first. So that you can all rest assured I would not do.
Thank you very much. Sorry, excuse me, hello. Good evening, madam. I just want to close for the evening, and Marcelo, who is the director of Democracy in Action. He is going to come up and thank you for the evening. I thank you for the debate. I thank you for coming out, each and every one of you, for engaging your community and caring about the issues that matter and doing something about it. Thank you. So I'm going to leave you with Mr. Marcelo.
As you can tell, I'm also a minority. I'm a Hispanic. I'm from Ecuador. I live just two blocks away from Jen and Finch. And I have been in this community since 1975, and I don't think I will ever leave it. I'm not planning to run, and I'm not running for anything, but I'm interested in something that is very important for all of us. Nothing will happen unless people participate in democracy and make change happen. That is the reason why we have created DIA. I pass my book around, and I ask you to give me your names and phone numbers, because this thing is going to grow, and I'm going to turn it back to you at one point as a coordinator so that you can actually pick up by practice, by doing activism, by being militant in our community, so that our youth, our mothers, our grandmothers, our son, our kids will have an organization that will be able to organize this kind of events, not only for elections, but after elections, DIA is going to call all of you to participate again and follow up all the process, because democracy in Ward 8 is not going to finish the date of the election. So I'm inviting you to come, and I don't know if you can help us to get this place for Saturday the 20th, okay? For Saturday the 20th, and I will promise that I will bring a case of water for you guys so that we can keep talking from it. From 6 to 8, if you can make the arrangements. I don't have money to pay for it, and that is one of the biggest problems that I found, that there is nothing available when you want to deal with youth, democracy, and the problems that need to be solved. So please, tell everyone in the community for the 20th of November, which is Saturday, from 6 to 8, with your promise, right? We'll arrange it.
Marcelo, no, you know, permits don't work like that. If there's a group in here from 6 to 8 on Saturday night, I don't know what the situation is here. And I'm sorry, but if someone has been planning an event for months and months and months and they're expecting to be here, I think that they would expect to have the place. So, Marcelo, that commitment cannot be made
At least if we can have a place where we can meet and get our community near the Jen and Finch area. Okay. On behalf of DIA, I really want to thank you all. This has been an effort that it really didn't have the resources to create this situation, but this is the only debate that has been done for our community. And it shouldn't be that way, really. We should have done two or three debates about the issues that one of the most important communities in Toronto, which is precisely Jen and Finch, that is known not only in Toronto, not only in Canada, but all over the world. Jen and Finch is very, very, very popular. And I'm very proud that I live two blocks away from Jen and Finch. So you are invited to join DIA and be part of it and help us to make changes and create real participatory democracy and create community governance, which is the idea behind DIA. Thank you.